welcome to another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeed. 866-901-ADAM. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, P. O'Brien.
Hello.
On a big special note, Bauer Honda, they got me a very fast car.
What's up?
I've been touring all this whole weekend and been in Utah, or this whole week, and been in Utah and everywhere. Mm-hmm. I woke up to hear, and the show's recorded because some guy pushed the record button. The show is over. We were starting this show.
Hold on, my house. Quickly, at the end of the replay, that's the thing they play. Yes, when we're done playing the 5 a.m. replay, that means we're going into our last commercial set. So what that means is you have about 6 minutes, maybe 6.5 minutes to get from wherever. When you hear that, wherever you are.
La Brea and Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, that's out there. Yes. When you hear this.
I turned my key and I heard this.
Yeah, that means you have 5 or 6 commercials to get here.
Very stressful, isn't it?
Do I have toothpaste all over my face and stuff?
No.
It's not toothpaste.
Well, I wasn't that busy.
So you hauled ass over here. Oh. Yeah. Look, I've said it 1,000 times, that thing, when I grew up, when I was going through, I failed driver's ed in high school and had to take a class in Van Nuys.
I find that hard to believe about you.
Well, I'll get to that, too, but let me say this. Our society, there's no real connection between the class you take and what you do and how good you are at it.
Yeah, because I passed the test, but I failed the actual driving test twice.
I don't want to brag, but here's my record. I drive like an a-hole.
Right.
And I've never been in an accident. And I drive with my knee, and I drink coffee, and I talk on a cell phone, and I tailgate, and I drive like an a-hole, a total a-hole. Now, I drive like an a-hole, and I've never been in an accident because I have hypervigilance. Right. I have super fast hand-eye coordination, I have great balance, and I have eyes in the back of my head, and I've avoided 1,000 accidents in my life just because I've seen people coming out of the corner of my eye, or I've hit the brakes, or whatever it is. I'm good at it. I can drive faster than most people can because I'm better at it, just like any sport, tennis or golf or anything. If you're good at it and you're sort of skilled at it, well, then you can play at a faster pace without sort of screwing up. And I taught traffic school for a while, too. But I did fail driver's ed when I was in the 10th grade, just to compound one of the worst years of my life. We should do that. We should write that down. Worst year of your life.
I think mine would also be 10th grade.
10th grade?
Terrible.
Danny?
Mine might be 10th grade.
The third time you did the 10th grade or the first time?
I think the second time I did the 10th grade.
You're 15 then, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, let's make a note, because at some point we should all just go over our 10th grade, where you were, who you were dating.
I will bring a picture from that year.
Who?
I think you said it all right there.
Who you weren't dating.
Yeah.
What you were doing, what your family life was like. All right, 10th grade relived. We'll do it at some point. But the point is whatever grade you get in school versus, or its correlation between how good you are at any given thing, no real correlation. No. And that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's not a great sign. All the great entrepreneurs that were thrown out of business school and that kind of thing. But
yeah,
anyway.
I agree with you. I think test taking is a particular skill.
I actually said that about Adam just the other day. Somebody was saying something, I forget what it was, and I said, well, you forget. It wasn't pejorative, but I didn't think it was a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something about the American Genius billboards, and I said, hey, buddy, Einstein failed math.
Yes. Well, like I said, that was Jimmy's idea. I just made him tell Jack to do it.
That's okay. Then I compared the show to a math class and said, you suck at it.
Yeah. But hauling ass. Hauling ass gets you from point A to point B much faster. And we tried to ignore that as a society. Slow and steady wins the race. You know, they would always do that thing. It was a driver's ed thing. Timmy left the city the same time Johnny left the city. Timmy Timmy saw all posted speed limits and abided by all the traffic rules. Johnny sped and ignored. They both arrived at the airport at the same time. That is total BS. I have been doing radio for 13 years, and I have been late getting into my car for said radio job. If you combined it, probably 4.5 to 5 years out of the 13 years. When I got in my car and shut the door and I looked at the clock, I said, if I do not haul ass, make a few signals, and roll through some four-way stops, I'm not going to be on time, and have hauled ass and have made it, just like you would if you're running late to make a flight or train or bus or anything else. Hauling ass. Look, it's the physical equivalent to running. It's the automotive equivalent to running. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it's like somebody's walking and just loping along at a super slow pace, and then some other guy says, hey, man, the movie starts in 5 minutes. Come on, it's down at the end of the street. And I start jogging, and then some a-hole goes, slow down. You're not going to get in your seat any faster. It's like, the hell I'm not.
Of course I am, yeah.
You hauling ass in your car is the automotive equivalent to you breaking into a jog. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. And some
Danny
people
broke
sprint.
Into. Yeah, Danny sprinted here this morning.
When they say that Steve and Jimmy, who is the guy that went real fast but didn't get there any sooner?
Timmy.
Okay. Timmy, they don't add in, broke every single law in the world.
Right.
A red light at Santa Monica Boulevard meant a quick right turn onto Santa Monica
then
Boulevard.
Because that's legal.
Yeah.
Then a quick left through the gas station and out the other side. I broke every law in the world, and here I sit.
It is funny when you break three laws so you don't have to break one bigger law.
Right.
Like you go, I'm not going to run this red. I don't want any trouble. But if I pull a quick right, then I do a Brody and an e-brake through the Shell station, I should catch some air coming out onto Melrose. Then I go right into another e-brake and a quick U-turn. I drive through that preschool, and I'm on the other side. No problema. And it's like, if a cop saw you do your 9-point turn with the e-brake and the Brody, he would say, well, the only law he didn't break was going through the red light.
But I think the difference is if you're stopped at a red light and you just go,
yes,
a cop would just hate you.
Yes.
If you at least try and look like you're being some sort of law somewhere and you can look at it and say, well, I thought I took the right turn.
Yeah. And then I realized I needed gas. I try to get my story together.
Well, here's the deal. I've been running tons of red lights lately and tons of red arrows and tons of everything. Here's the deal with the red lights. Here's the thing. Here's what I've learned with cops. Here's how the man works.
Did you just burp?
I did. I would say, I don't know the exact statistics on this, but my gut is real good about this stuff. I would say 50 to 70% of tickets are handed out in just plain old speed traps.
Right.
And when I say speed traps, I don't mean you driving through Pusser County on your on you know, like you're in some 70s movie and some Jackie Gleason gets out of your car. I was driving home yesterday. I was driving up Highland. Highland's a long stretch, and there's a medium in the road with trees and things in it, and it goes long stretches without any cross traffic, so people tend to speed. That's where you speed. The reason you speed there is because there's a big 10-foot wide medium in between the two things, and then long distances between side streets. So it's safer to go faster there. And there's a little downhill grade if you're coming one direction. Well, as I was driving up it, I saw a motorcycle cop, and he was just planted there. He's just planted there, and he's holding his radar gun like a pussy, by the way. But he's just sitting there holding his radar gun. That's a speed trap. We don't call it a speed trap, but that's what it is. Yeah. Now, I would say that 50 to 70% of people who get moving violations get tickets that way. It's pre-planned. Cop there, waiting. Okay, the other way is cop up the driveway, hiding, four-way stop sign, and getting people to roll through it. Again, a pussy maneuver, but it's pre-planned. The other way is the cops out on patrol, just driving up and down the freeway, looking for speeders, catching you with the radar gun from the overpass, that kind of thing. Visually and actively looking to give out tickets.
Right.
Guys on motorcycle cops going up and down Ventura Boulevard just looking for guys rolling through things, weaving, and doing U-turns. Things that catch their eyes. Well, the thing about running a red light, all you got to do is look in your rear view. If there's no cop back there and you take a buzz around, then you drive through. Because cops don't hang out at intersections with speed traps and radar guns and all. They're not. That's not where they're looking for. You see,
I wouldn't have thought that.
They're looking for you to fall asleep and do something wrong, not volitionally. They're looking for you to make a cell phone call, get going down a downhill grade. And you want to hear about the biggest puss maneuver there is. I was driving down Topanga Canyon out here. Topanga Canyon is right where Spahn Ranch is or was. That's Manson's. That's where the Manson family used to hang out. I was in Chatsworth. There's a long downhill grade from the 118 freeway down a long, steep, straightaway hill. There's no side streets. It's just kind of open and rural, and it's long. And, of course, there's a cop right at the bottom, and he's holding the radar gun. Who's he waiting for? He's waiting for you who are making a cell phone call, not really paying attention, driving in a brand-new Denali, feeling very safe, and going 43 down this long downhill grade that you almost can't help speeding on because it's so long and so straight and so steep. They're out looking for you. I have gone through 15,000 red light arrows now, and I haven't gotten an effing ticket. And you want to know why? Because they're not behind me, they're not camped out there, and they're not doing it. You can go out and do as much illegal crap as you want to do.
Thank you.
If you doze off, that's when they nail you. It's when you doze off and you don't know how fast you were going, or you don't know what you were doing. The arrows thing, I did one of my favorite ones last night. Once in a while, and I do this quite a bit. Yeah, that was last night. This morning. I'm so committed to turning left when that left turn arrow is red and the signal is green. Once in a while, I see some puss or some lemming that's in my lane. He's stopped. He's waiting. And I'm so committed to not doing it that last night, I slid out in the next lane, slowed down next to him, waited until it cleared up, and then went around him and turned left. Yes, I actually turned left from the wrong lane at the arrow. I'm so committed to it. I was going to say second to my twins, but actually my twins take a distant
backseat.
A backseat of a car that's turning left on a
red arrow. Did you make eye contact?
Take a child. No, once in a while I get the toot from the horn from the guy, like you maniac. But
no,
I
make eye contact. I can let them know they're being dweebs.
I started doing this, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. It's the greatest. You know when people talk about that thing where they go, hey, man, I found Jesus Christ about 6 years ago and it changed my life, or I got sober 6-7 years ago, changed my life, or I started doing yoga 6-7, I started taking the supplements, and they start telling you to give you that testimonial. For me, going left through red arrows. Started about 6-7 years ago. It has been the greatest, most liberating thing I've ever done in my life, and I've not gotten one effing ticket. And I've saved thousands and thousands of hours just sitting and rotting at a signal. So kiss my hairy ass.
I'll tell you, I was, because I agree with you 100%, but I was going so fast this morning down La Brea. My big fear was not what was behind me. It was what was in front of me and that I was going to catch up to, because I was doing well over 100 miles an hour at some point. So if you got a cop doing 35, you're going 65 miles an hour compared to him being stopped.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to see in time that that's the cops. I mean, literally 100 miles an hour down. Yeah. And you see taillights, you just go, I hope that's not a cop, because I'm going to go 100 miles an hour rather than hear that music. Dun, dun,
well, let me dun, let, dun. Let
still
me
be in the car, because I know I'm going to blow my brains out.
Let me say this, Deutschman, and I'll say this to anyone who's working on this program. Do not kill yourself or anybody else. I will be here because I will be speeding. I will have a laugh about you being late. I will give you a quick jab, and then we'll move on with the show. It's really that sort of technical part of you rolling in 90 seconds late or 63 seconds late. Do not care about anyone who works on this show. You may show up. You have my permission to show up moments late.
I appreciate that, but as a boxer, let me ask you something. You get hit by that little jab, big deal. What happens if you get hit by that same jab 100 times?
Starts to add up. That's right.
You're all bloody, and you lose, basically.
Yes.
You only get your permission as the host a certain amount of time until it gets back to the bosses, who, when they talk to you about anything, want to throw up anything at all they get in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really like it if you'd get to the show on time. That would be nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be the condescending. That would be nice too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have. I've
been lately. What, 3-4 times?
I've said one. I said 1,000 times.
That doesn't count if I'm outside smoking.
All right. I say.
I mean, for the dump part.
For me, it makes no never mind. You can be a few moments late. It is zero difference to me. I don't take anything personally. It's all pragmatic. And the only time I really, as I've said before, get PO'd about someone being late is when I'm standing out front of the theater and now missing the trailers. Which has now become my favorite part of all new movies now. I'm missing the trailers because I'm waiting for you. That screws me up. Or I go out to eat, but I can't order. That kind of thing. If it's the kind of thing where I'm just going to go in and sit down in a theater and start watching the trailers, and you sit down next to me whenever you feel like it, which could be halfway through the movie, your business. Quickly, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Hey, I had a quick question about... for each one of you, actually. I mean, you called Danny the Dooch Man and Teresa T. I want to know how you got your nickname Ace.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to Danny's nickname Red Bull? Mm. That was a great nickname.
I loved Red Bull.
It didn't stick,
Mike. You're
yeah.
Right.
All right.
My legal name is Dante, and it didn't stick. Everybody's called me Danny since the day I was born. My son's name is Dante, and everyone calls him Dante. Some people stick, and some people don't.
It is weird, yeah. Hey,
are you supposed to like your nickname? That's the other thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike. Let us take a break.
Okay.
And we'll do a couple of things. Like the way he gave me. If he'd said no, we'd have to talk for another 45 minutes.
I'd like to go put on the underwear that are in my pocket.
You don't have your panties on?
My underwear in my pocket. I was running late, dude.
Put your underwear on, Mike.
Yes, sir.
You get your underpanties out of a bunch, and you hang on and listen. And when we come back, a couple of things. We'll all tell you about whatever nicknames we had coming up, and I'll tell you how I got mine. And then Danny will tell us what went on in Utah with Tom Arnold in the movie he shot yesterday, because I'm curious about the plot and how that works. All right, we'll take a quick break. Also, at some point, I do want to get into everyone reliving the worst year of their life. Maybe this is bad radio to talk too much about something we're not going to do just yet, but I want to plant the seed in everyone's head.
Good, I'm
and
glad
later,
you're
later on, you guys can chime in and tell us about your horrible year. But I think we've all agreed our 10th grade year is good and horrible, as bad a year as we've all had collectively.
Well, I'm glad you reset. No, I'm wrong. At least I had a roof over my head in the 10th grade.
Mm. All right. Well, you can pick another year. I'm going to go 10th grade.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll mop up.
It's the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. Now a message from the man who knew too little, Program Director Jack Silver.
I'm going off the rails on a crazy train, peeps! Today, your chance to win tickets to see Ozzy Osbourne in a new round of Nicaraguan Name That Tune! From this weekend's Comedy Festival in Las Vegas, comedian Mark Maron. A brand new Hill Hauser adventure. The Ace Man tackles your home improvement problems. And this just in, the great Coot Strike of 07 comes to a glorious conclusion as we welcome Debbie Mazar. I mean, I don't know. Late?
Thank you, Jack. 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, where was we? We were talking about nicknames. We're talking about Danny in Utah. Quickly, I got the name Ace, like you call a fat guy stretch. Ask a chick out to the prom, she would turn me down. Then my friends would say, how'd that go? And I'd say, it didn't go so good. And then they'd say, Ace strikes again, you know. It's one of these things, you strike out, hey, Ace, nice cut, you know what I mean? Just, it was one of those. And it just sort of stuck. Usually, when people give you nicknames, it's because they're lazy or they like you. You know, you'll see it sometimes if a guy has a long name. You see it in sports all the time. There's some guy, I don't know why, but there's some guy with the last name of Hushmanzada or there's some Samoan guy named Tuka Tuka Makakiki, and others call him the M-Man.
Right.
Hockey has a lot of that.
Yeah. Here's why there's lots of nicknames in sports. Lots of dumb guys who aren't good at talking. They're good at punching and pushing and wrestling, but they're not so good at talking. So if you're Takalakahuka and you're from the island of Guam, you will just be called the T-Man and we'll move forward. That's the way it works. We have a bunch of uneducated guys who can't pronounce anything. They're not going to be able to pronounce your last name. So Ace, I was always called Ad, just plain old Ad, just short for Adam. Yeah, I used to get called Ad all the time, and then it turned to Ace, but mainly because I was an F-up. Now, Danny just got back from Utah.
Right.
You went there yesterday to shoot a movie with Tom Arnold.
Yes.
What was the movie about, and how does it go, and what was your role?
Well, the most interesting thing, when you said, what was happening in Utah? That's an oxymoron right there. The answer is nothing.
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 Really?
I stayed at this hotel where they drew you a map of the bungalow you'd be in, and I walked around freezing for 45 minutes trying to find my room. Secondly, I didn't bring a coat because I didn't think it would be freezing in Utah. I think of those big red rocks and all that stuff.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be a desert.
It was one. It was one. I mean, one is not the actual degree, but when it gets to a certain temperature, I always say it's one. If it's
right.
Cold enough to really bother you, it's 1 degree.
Well, I like the metric Fahrenheit way of doing it, or is it the, no, it's not Fahrenheit,
Celsius?
It's Celsius way of doing it, which is I like zero being zero and one being one.
Yeah, confusing when 32
'cause it sucks when you go, oh, man, it was freezing, it was 31 degrees, and it's like, that sounds like something. I like zero.
Yeah.
More satisfying.
31 degrees in Celsius is like 92, right?
It's the opposite, which is, I believe, in the Celsius, zero is zero. I do believe. And so if it's 31 or 32 degrees, I think you're at zero. When it's blazing, when it's 100 degrees, I think it's like... Oh, you know, it's weird. It's a weird scale that slides around, but it's like 60-something. Oh, we'll look it up. But I think zero in Celsius is 32.
Suffice to say, right. You were cold.
You were cold.
Suffice to say, and that was what was happening in Utah. The movie is about Tom Arnold being some kind of bumbling priest at a Catholic school, which, by the way, was shot at a gigantic Catholic school in Utah. I didn't even know they allowed Catholics in Utah.
Interesting.
I thought you had to... I mean, this place was gigantic. It looked much more like a college. Then a bell rang. School was in session. We're shooting around. So I've got fairly hot actresses in the front row of this auditorium who are supposed to ask me sex questions. And then there are all these hot other girls who turn out to be actual Catholic schoolgirls. Who I'm asking sex questions, because you can't tell who is who.
Right.
You know, a girl playing 16 and a girl being 16 are very similar.
Yeah.
Almost too similar for the D-man.
Now, let me get this straight. Were you playing you in the movie doing a seminar on sex?
Would you like... Okay, first of all, I got the script before I got on the plane. It was a 3-page monologue. I give a speech. And the director said, and I've got a podium, so I've got the pages. And he goes, you know, I just have a feeling you'd move away from the podium and just walk
around.
So
Danny dragged the podium while he was walking.
I've never really bothered to commit to my 3-page speech because I've got a podium. So I get through, but to give you an answer to what my character was, I played Danny Bonducci. And I said, why would they ask Danny Bonaducci to give such an important speech on sexual education? Some people may blame my troubles on alcohol, drugs, steroids, anger management, and my inability to tell a transvestite from a real woman. Which was an accident, I swear to God. Was that kind of thing.
Right.
So I played
That's not bad.
It wasn't bad, and I was kind of funny because I made some stuff up. But Tom and I have one thing in common, which turned into two bad things. And that is, when I do the commercials around here, when I do my commercials, I don't like to screw up and have the editor go, well, just start from the line before that, and I'll put it together. I go, no, let me start from the top. I want to get it right.
Right.
We both had these big speeches and insisted on starting over, and none of us knew our lines. We did it all day. The director's going, no, just start from there. It's fine. Oh, no, no, no. I really want to get on a roll here.
It is.
So we're there for a good portion of the day just doing that one thing.
It is amazing. I've had this happen. Danny's this way. Teresa, I don't think you're as much this way, but think about it and answer honestly. I did a part in a movie recently, not my own movie, but it was that movie Waiting 2. They're doing that movie that had everybody in it about a year and a half ago.
Ryan Reynolds and such.
Dane Cook, Ryan Reynolds. Just if you look at the cast, you'll go, oh, that guy, that guy, that guy, and that guy. It was kind of a cult movie. I guess it made some money. It was a regular movie.
Right.
They're doing a part two, which I'm sure will not be as big, so that's why they needed me. But I had a part in it, and my part was 7-8 pages of dialogue. Now, I don't mean full dialogue, but I mean 7-8 pages of me talking, conversing, then back and forth, then me talking for long. And the back and the forth was the other person saying, you think so? And then me going on another long-winded diatribe, and then that person going, tell me more. And then me going on another long-winded diatribe. It was between 7 and 9 pages. I was
Forever, by the way. Done on time, that's 2 days?
I crammed it into one, but I'm standing at a bar, I'm facing the camera, and I'm talking. It's like tutorial kind of video, and I'm having to point that one over there. You see that one over there? There was about 6 people I had to go. Now, this one over here is this kind of person, and that one over there. I got the script 2 weeks in advance. I brushed over it and said, ooh, we got a mouthful here. And then a week later, I looked at it one more time and went, woo, this is a mouthful. And I put it back down again. And then the night before I had to go in and shoot, I looked at it one more time and I went, woo, this is a mouthful. And I set it back down again. And then I sat down in makeup and I opened it again and I went, woo, this is a mouthful, and this mouthful is supposed to be coming out of this mouth in about 12 minutes. And so as I sat there in the makeup chair having to do that thing where the makeup artist will talk your ass off, even if your face can be buried in a script, because now it's crunch time, baby. I mean, the test is going to be taken in 10 minutes, and you are cramming now. There's 30 people in the next room, and they're all going to be effed up if you don't get your lines down. So then there's that thing where you're looking at it and the chick's giving you that thing. Have you ever had airbrush makeup put on before? And you're like doing that thing where you're not looking up and you're going, you know, one time I think we did that, I don't know, MTV. I don't know if it was Singled Out, Redondo Beach or something. But your finger's like dragging along the thing. And then the director comes and gets you, and he goes, okay, here's your mark or whatever. And you realize as they're going, okay, everybody, let's settle in now. Let's try one. As they're saying that, you're thinking, try one what?
What?
I know a little bit of what's going on here, but wow, do I not know. And they're like, okay, let's try one where we just go all the way through it, and then we'll go back. And you're thinking, all the way through it? All the way through, there's 8 or 9 pages. I'll be lucky if I get halfway down the first page. All the way, I don't even know where all the way through is. Now, I have the ability to do it, which is I can modify their words into my words that they usually like better, so it always works out. But if they say, let's get one that's just as written, we are in a world of hurt. But the interesting dynamic, and this is what made me a horrible student, and I'm guessing it's what made Danny a horrible student, and it's probably what made Teresa a good student, because she doesn't do this, but it is the difference between good and bad students. I am perfectly willing to go right from this radio show directly to the set, sit down in the makeup chair with 9 pages of dialogue that I glanced at 2 times when I had a red wine buzz and was watching SportsCenter on TiVo, and I'm ready to go. In my mind, no problemo, here I am. And as I stand at my mark and as the guy holds the tape measure from my nose and holds it back to the camera and the director tells everyone to settle in, the last thought that runs through my mind is, what did you think was going to happen? Did you think you were going to just somehow rub the thing on your forehead in your trailer moments before you went out and just through osmosis just digest the entire? Of course you don't know the words. You barely looked at the words. What did you think was going to happen? It's the same thing I used to have when I would take a test on Monday morning, not study the entire weekend, and then it'd be like, you know, in 1852, what? And you'd think. And then you think, how would I know? I never cracked We the People once over the course of the weekend. Now, that's what bad students do. Good students.
Strategery.
Good students think, oh my God, I only have 2 days to study for this test. I wish it was a 3-day weekend so I could study for a third day.
Right. That makes a good student just a suck person.
Teresa?
Yeah. I mean, I have never had a more antithetical experience. I was in that movie, Bring It On Yet Again, the third sequel. I had maybe 6 lines. I always just play a fake reporter as interviewing the cheerleader, Beyonce's sister.
Mm-hmm.
I got the script, read the whole script, even though I'm only in one scene. Because I need to know the context.
I have no idea what happens in this movie.
Danny, you and I are cut out of the same super lazy cloth.
Cover to cover.
I've never read a script. I've been handed 1,000 scripts. I go fine. I do that thing where I go to the front. I go, what's, ooh, okay. I play Jake. And then I kind of throw it and I highlight everything named Jake. I have no idea what's going on in the script or who I'm talking to.
Read the whole thing cover to cover the night I got it.
Oh my God.
Knew my lines so cold that I could probably still recite them. And that's, I mean, I've probably done 7 TV shows and a few movies. I'm always a reporter. So it's not that difficult. I don't have a huge monologue. I'm the one going, do you think you can win this competition?
Is
your client going to get off?
What motivates you? Fear?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I feel like, thank you.
Bring It On 3. And nominated for best fake reporter.
I was a fake reporter.
And Bring It On 3. Teresa Strasser.
I can't lose. When I go up for a fake reporter role, I go in the waiting room and I say, everyone, you might as well leave.
I'm not done.
There's more to your intro.
Best fake reporter in Stomp 5. Make some noise. Dame Judi Dench. Sorry.
Yeah. My fake reporting. I think I always get cast because I sort of look ambiguously ethnic. Mm-hmm. And I have actually been a reporter, so I can pull it off. But no, I learn every line and the other characters and what's going on in the story where my scene comes in. Because, yeah, it's out of fear. I don't want to be the one that holds up the set. And I usually think, what I lack in natural ability, I'm going to make up for in preparedness. I will always be the most prepared.
You know, the cornerstone to the horrible student, and again, this is, you know, that thing where teachers say, hey, man, if you don't do this, then you're not going to do that. And you're going to be, and you think, screw you, Pops. If you're paying me, I'm going to do a better job.
Right.
This is, if I could distill down the one element as a human being that is the difference between a good student and a bad student, it is this. It is this very gene. It is this very personality trait and this very element. Again, that feeling of I'm not going to study for the test or I'm not going to study my lines. I'm not going to do anything. Somehow it'll work out.
Right.
Somehow it'll work out. That's a confidence that you and I have. Whereas T has this, the room will start spinning and they will yell that I'm stupid and fire me on the spot.
Yeah.
So she overcompensates. We undercompensate and go the other direction. And again, in life, you might be able to make it by. In tests, you don't make it by. You just don't know the material.
Here's a true story. In high school, I don't know if you guys had achievement tests. We had achievement tests, and you could take them in English, in French, in history, in math.
Eh.
And you chose two, and this would help you get into college. I took the French achievement test. I had taken French 3 years. I bought this book to prepare. And then I scored higher on the test than our French foreign exchange student who spoke fluent French and no English. I couldn't speak French. I just could take the test.
You beat Jacques Lestrap in the French test?
C'est au revoir.
Wow.
But I mean, I can't speak French, and I don't remember any French. I could just take the test well. Useless.
I do exactly what the Ace Man does. Because I saw spots for jokes that I felt were either better than the ones they had or topped the ones they had, meaning I could still use theirs and then add mine.
Right.
One of my lines was, I'm here to talk about the topic your priest likes to call the fiery wrath of God. I like to call it the consequences of casual sex.
Mm-hmm.
I added, I'm here to talk about a topic your priest calls the fiery wrath of God, which really sounds like it burns when you pee. They were, oh, keep that, you genius, you.
Right.
And then I went on and did, and so I got most of their lines, but the ones I didn't get, they liked mine better, and said, oh, you're the greatest.
I think Danny and I rely on that, whereas when you're taking the test, you can't go, oh, yeah, I know they want the Magna Carta as the answer.
I got a better one. I'm going to freestyle on this.
Yeah, the Shroud of Ace Man. Yeah, that'll be funny. I'll write that
one. Manifest Destiny. That never sounded right.
That'll be funny. How about I give you some Manifest Destiny right in your face? Yeah, write that down, Ace Man.
You're going to get out of your face with my fist in your head.
You're going to get an A for sure on this one. You've just punched up the history test. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. One man that needs no preparation, Huell Howser.
Yeah, baby.
Everybody, we got a little teaser for you.
How long have they been here? When did they get here? How are they grown? How are they harvested? Well, to answer these burning questions, we're getting ready to go on an honest-to-goodness, all-day avocado adventure.
Dude. Wow. I waited for you, man.
We're going on an avocado adventure next with Huell Howser.
It's the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. Every now and then, we break down the game film from another episode of PBS's Huell Howser.
We are definitely in avocado country.
Yes, we are, Huell. Huell Howser on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, two things I love, guacamole and Huell.
Boy, this is going to be fun.
Fixture out here in Southern California on PBS for about 25 years. California's Gold, one of his many shows, hits the road, talks to boring people about rocks. We heard the first one. Now let's go into Huell as he sets up his up. Now, are we going to play the setup? Want to play the setup again? Or do you want to go into Huell talks about avocado history? All right, let's do the setup first.
Hello, everybody. I'm Huell Howser, and right now we've pulled off to the side of Highway 76 here in North San Diego County, and we're at the Palo Rey Produce Stand, and a nice little produce stand it is. We have come here in search of something, and here they are, the good old California avocado. Now, as far as Californians are concerned, the avocado is pretty much a part of our life. It's part of our diet. It's always been around. Question is, what's the real story on these little green fruits?
See, to me, this is a slippery slope, because once you get the real story on avocado, then you have to get the real story on broccoflower and the real story on asparagus.
Tangelos.
And eventually get the real story on a shotgun in your mouth. Yeah, I don't need the real story on tangelos or avocados or anything.
I'm curious. I thought an avocado was just an avocado.
No, there's a story. There's a story behind that green thing that hangs from a tree.
I actually know a little bit about avocados.
You do?
I know that they're very heavily laden in fat.
Dude.
And I know the way to remove the pit. There's a trick to that.
How do you do it?
You slice the avocado in half, like all right. Then you just take your knife and go whack right into the big giant seed. Hold the bottom, turn the knife sideways, and pull it right out.
Do the hatchet move. I do. I bite into it sometimes and twist it. All right, that is Huell. Now Huell is going to talk to the avocado historian.
And here to kind of fill us in on the history of avocados in California, your name, sir?
Jack Shrubbery.
And you are known far and wide as the official historian for avocados in California.
Self-named.
Well, tell us a little bit about how avocados,
when
were the first avocados in California?
Sexually dangerous, I would describe
it. The first known planting of an avocado was in 1857.
He did it.
In Los Angeles County.
He was
in
his 40s.
Before that, there were no avocado trees here.
That's correct.
Oh, yeah.
Am I right?
No avocados in California before 1847?
Yeah, no humans in California before 1850.
That's the kind of crap I like to remember and then force into a conversation later. Remember I told you the other day, the first person that went through Ellis Island?
Yes.
I thought in my head, that's the thing I need to know and force into a conversation. Must have done it three times on the set the other day.
You can just wedge it in about the avocado?
No, I will find a way. No, oh, God, that's easy. It's in all your food. I'll say no.
More of a cramming process than a wedging process.
Yeah.
All right. Huell is going to go to the avocado forest Sounds like some place your mean stepmom would say you're going if you don't eat your vegetables. And he's going to talk, and there's something to do with a farmer's dog.
Well, we have arrived at the avocado forest. We are being led down into the forest by the avocado dog. And we are heading down in here because we understand there's some actual picking going on down here. And we're going to see for ourselves just what all of this is about.
There's a sad footnote, which is Dawson got stoned and ate the avocado dog.
Oh, no.
Yeah, a couple days after they shot.
Dude, I waited for you, man.
We keep playing this because Dawson's favorite festival of the year is the Avocado Festival, which takes place in Who Cares, Santa Barbara. And we...
he runs it. I think he's the impresario of the festival.
He talks about it like it's con or like...
It's his con.
Like it's the Indy 500 or something. And when you go, no, I've never been to the Ava. You've never been?
Dude...
It's his Burning Man.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Huell watches avocado picking. Now, this should make for great radio.
Now, this is amazing watching him. What do you call this? Pick these? Cut these avocados?
Picking avocados. This is how we do it. One piece at a time.
And it's not... You're right. It's one piece at a time. There's only one picker here.
Yeah.
Now, are these professional avocado... pickers? I mean, is this a skill that
Mexicans
workers acquire?
Oh, definitely. The guys that do it good, such as Mario here, they're really good at it, and they do it right.
They can get as much as $3
an
hour.
Up in the tree.
Yeah, these guys. That guy's the best. Mario over there.
Oh, my God.
The guy on the A-frame ladder. No, none better. You'd have to, you'd probably have to look probably within 30 or 35 feet to find another guy who can go up on an A-frame ladder and pull baseballs off a tree.
Some things come in a bushel, and some things come in a basket.
Mm.
What do you put avocados in?
You put them in producer Dawson. He's carrying. It's called the Dawson. It's like a cord of wood.
We'll be back.
All right. We'll take ourselves a quick break. We'll come back. More excitement from the avocado tree farm with Huell.
I want to ask you.
Coming up this morning, comedian Marc Maron.
Not only is drug testing unconstitutional, I think it's cheating. In the way I figured, if you can't tell I'm high by looking at me, I win.
Nicaraguan named that tune where Oswaldo sings the hits of Ozzy Osbourne.
All aboard!
And you can win tickets to see Ozzy Osbourne live November 30th at Staples Center. From Entourage and Goodfellas, Debbie Mazar. The news with Teresa Strasser and Danny Bonaducci will come in late from break, slam doors, shadow box his microphone, and say things like,
nice.
Nice. 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, we were talking about Huell Hauser moments ago. He took a little trip to the avocado farm to give us a quick tutorial on avocados. I happen to love avocados. I find most everyone does, but some people have a problem with the texture of avocados.
Well, I can guess who we're talking about.
Guess.
I'm going to go with Ange.
Producer Angie. That's right. People have weird texture issues with avocados.
I'm drunk.
But to me, nothing better. Nothing better on a burger and a salad, wherever, than avocado.
It's a good all-around food.
One of the few... foods or fruits or whatever. I think it might be a fruit for some reason, maybe because of the pit. I think it's technically a fruit, but either way, hold on, let's ask the fruit expert. Board up, Bill.
If it grows on a tree, it's a fruit.
Uh-huh.
Or a vine.
Hey!
Untrue.
Has nothing to do with the pit?
It is true.
It's not true. The Supreme Court made a decision on
it. Or it's a nut. It's either a fruit or a nut, both of which I love.
All right.
There was a Supreme Court decision on whether a tomato was a fruit.
This is amazing.
I think it was whether ketchup was fruit.
Wait, was this the fact
vegetable
you were going to wedge in today?
No, this is one of the ones, though, that I hear and wedge, but I don't have it perfect.
Same one Tom Arnold heard this time yesterday in Provo.
But if it cannot be served cold as and considered a dessert.
Now, this is
it can't
interesting
be considered a fruit.
I remember Reagan fighting for ketchup being a vegetable because it was served on hot dogs at crappy schools. That's the tomato argument I remember. Either way, I think it's a fruit, and I think it has something to do with the tree, but also there's something to do with the pit.
Okay, time. time has passed.
Part of it. It's hard to think of a vegetable with a pit. Anyway.
I don't know how we're going to top this.
Well, Angelina Jolie.
We're going to do it right now. Go ahead, Huel.
Your dog is eating an avocado.
Yeah, that dog eats avocados. All our dogs eat avocados. If you're an avocado farmer, your dog likes them too.
I've never seen a dog eat avocados before.
How clean that shell is. That shell's. You don't get much cleaner than that. You don't get that clean in your kitchen.
Look at this.
That's good stuff.
That dog ate every speck of that avocado.
That one's gone.
Now that's an avocado eating dog.
Wait, what's he? Let me get this straight.
She's going to eat the whole thing.
Wow.
So she didn't leave any of the avocado?
Evidently, the dog likes avocado.
Okay.
It's really, you know what? There should be a diet. The diet should be called the, forget about all the South Beach and all this kind of stuff. It should be called the Will Your Dog Eat It diet. If your dog won't eat it, go ahead and eat it. That's the way it usually works. If I drop something healthy on the floor, my dog gives it a sniff and goes, screw this. Avocado is like the only thing that grows on a tree that makes you fat, and it's the only thing that grows on a tree a dog will eat.
I know.
A dog too. Dog will not eat broccoli, and it won't eat lettuce.
But, Danny, you'll know this. Why are avocados considered good fat?
Because they're not high in saturated fat, but in a, what is it, trans fat's bad.
It's some kind of good fat.
Well, look, one fat comes from the Keebler factory, and
yeah,
the other comes from
good.
God.
Right.
Pretty much.
It comes from a tree,
no,
so I can eat
it. No,
one
is like fish oil. You would always think that oil is bad.
Polyunsaturated. That's what it says on the screen. Point is,
I'm
this.
I'm going to go with the screen.
You can get fat eating stuff that grows on a tree, but it's not going to give you cancer.
Right.
You'll be the healthiest fat guy waddling down the street.
I'd rather have the cancer, but let's hear
too.
More.
Me too.
Huel is now going to wrap up his avocado grove visit.
Well, that's it. Our morning here at the Staley Groves in Valley Center in northern San Diego County. We've had a wonderful morning, gentlemen. We've
Thanks
watched
for
coming. You
let's say scintillating.
Plant the avocados, grow the avocados, pick the avocados, harvest the avocados. It's been a great day. Our avocado adventure. Actually, we also saw a dog eat an avocado today.
Let's not forget that.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Didn't leave a speck.
I can't believe that that's not been made into a musical. Dog eating an avocado. I mean, Huel, you can't sit on that gem, baby. You have to share it with
Why
the world.
Why doesn't Ken Burns do like an 8-part series for PBS and just break it down completely so we can understand it from all angles?
I think it's a little weirder than that.
Guacamole happened so fast.
Oh, boy.
Smashed a horse. It was eaten by Laz.
Oh,
love avocado on a burger, too. Deep.
Like it, even though she's a Jew.
Thank
yeah.
you. Guacamole.
I rhyme with guacamole.
That's a hard one.
Tell me more. All right.
Boy, you guys suck at that.
All right, we should have worked that one out.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
Ahead of time.
Finally, I think we have a little tail teaser here. This is a Huel talking to the Avocado Commission lady, and I'm sure she's a looker.
Well, you're here because you want to talk about how healthy it is.
They are so good for you. They're good for you inside and out.
Is it good for your hair, for the sheen of your hair?
Absolutely, and that's what I mean by and out. Yes.
And you know the reason I mentioned that at the Grove,
thought you
were
talking
just
about
visiting,
a closet.
Their dogs
eat
ate avocados, and they are the shiniest, healthiest looking coats.
Yeah. Somewhere around day number 8 of him bringing up the dog eating the avocado to his life partner, I say bludgeons him to death in his Palm Springs condominium.
But I think so, too. Then he says to the corpse, tell me more
about
that.
He's going to say one
avocado.
More time. There'll be that scene where they're just sitting and eating dinner, and there's a lull in the conversation, and Huel looks up at the guy and goes, you know, a dog. And you see the guy's, you just close up on the guy's right hand as his grip tightens on the steak knife. Yeah, I saw a dog eat an avocado. You just hear that little music. And you just see the guy's hand just start to buckle down on the steak knife and start to tremble.
It was
a rescue dog, but he certainly didn't leave anything behind when it came to eating that avocado. But the guy makes that deal. If he doesn't bring up avocado and dog in any order in the next 10 seconds.
Let him live.
Spare him. And then he's going, you know, I had a dog that didn't eat avocado. And he had to think about it and decided that was enough and lunged over the table with his knife.
See, I thought you guys missed something with the musical a few moments back. He doesn't say there's a dog eating avocado. He says, now that's an avocado-eating dog.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'd watch that.
Yeah.
I'd watch a giant avocado eat a dog and think, well, you finally got interesting. There's an avocado-eating dog.
All right, Huel, we kid because we love tea.
Yeah.
Why don't you tease the news? We'll go into the break.
Well, as the writer's strike continues, Letterman makes a very surprising move.
Mm.
And the Guild takes a stand against Ellen.
Mm. Mm. We'll do that in the news next.
And now, the Adam Carolla Show presents Great Moments in Local News.
You know the old saying, when life hands you lemons, make lemonade. Now try this one. When pandas hand you poop, make paper. Researchers in China want paper mills to make recycling products using panda poop. And one China breeding center produces nearly 2 tons of panda poop every day. This poop could be good for office supplies or even wrapping paper.
Another great moment in local news. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
No pandas eat bamboo.
I thought so.
Can you imagine what that deuce would look like if you just lived off of bamboo? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, just the pulp that came out of your ass.
A lot of roughage.
It's a perfect day for me. Well, before bears go into hibernation, they form what is called a natural butt plug.
Uh-huh.
So that they don't defecate during their entire hibernation.
And what do they do, just eat pine cones?
What they eat, I'm actually talking about an American bear.
They eat Mexican?
It stops them up for the whole hibernating period?
Yeah, it's a natural butt plug.
Interesting. But
nature's butt plug.
But that was Bill the board up. But the pandas, I mean, it's one thing if they ate some brisket and some bamboo. They just eat bamboo.
Yeah, we want paper, though, not a snack, right? We don't want the brisket on a bamboo platter. We want paper.
I'm just saying, on the Duke level, you know, there's Duke and then there's Duke. And
yeah.
Horse Duke, you know, once in a while you'll kick up like a road apple or something. It'll be, it's no big deal because all they eat is hay and alfalfa and it just kind of comes out like pulp. You get some human something on you. It's bad times. The guy polished off a couple Sonic burgers and he washed it down with the Mountain Dew. That's a disaster. I have not seen panda poop. I feel like I could handle it.
It seems like it would be fine.
The litmus test for poop is can you pick it up and chuck it at somebody when you're drunk?
I don't know.
If the answer is yes, then that's okay poop. And I feel like I could chuck me some panda poop.
What about Ray with a good spiral?
Ray will put some English on it, too. Yeah. All right, T.
Yeah.
Are you going to vomit?
No, I'm fine.
All right, let's do the news.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
Well, the Writers Guild East is nauseated by Ellen DeGeneres. She's come under fire for continuing with her daytime talk show despite the strike. She was supposed to go to New York next week to tape episodes there.
Mm-mm.
Turns out she'll be skipping that trip.
Mm.
The Writers Guild East.
I won't be able to see a wacky bit where she drives a hack through Manhattan.
Wait a second. That sounds hilarious. You mean she's the cab driver?
Of course that's
what
she
does. She doesn't need her writers. You can come up with stuff like that. Well, the Writers Guild East Coast branch accused the comedian of violating strike rules and basically told her she was unwelcome in New York.
Look, let me explain something to those people who have their panties in a bunch. First off, this was all taken care of if you watched the first show when she came back. As she explained very carefully, she didn't stand where she normally stands to deliver her monologue.
That's right.
She stood 9 feet from where she normally stands to do the show. So that takes care of that. Check that box off. Right. She did it in solidarity with the writers. You know how sometimes you go, hey, man, I stand with you guys?
Yeah.
Well, she stood over from those guys.
Right.
But she took a stand. It was in her studio. She was getting paid and the cameras were on, but she took a stand.
Yeah.
And number two, She has fans, as she's explained it. You other people, you Lettermans and you Lenos and your Kimmels and your Stewarts and your Colberts, you guys don't have fans. Ellen has fans, and she cares about her fans. So, not only does she have the weighty responsibility of having fans, you guys couldn't understand what that was like, you wouldn't know the responsibility that comes with it, but secondly, she took care of the problem by standing 4 feet from where she normally stands.
She paid
the ultimate price, which is standing off your mark.
Right. It's like somebody going on a diet with you in solidarity, but only eating pork rinds in the next room.
Right.
Yeah.
She took a stand.
On her pork rind.
Boy, back off, man. They only doing this because she's a lesbian?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're out together. The WGA said in a statement, quote, "We're delighted that Ellen DeGeneres has decided not to come to New York to tape her program." Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Letterman earlier.
Mm-hmm. Dude, they hate her.
Letterman. Mm-hmm. David Letterman has a company, as you know, called Worldwide Pants, which produces Late Show with David Letterman and The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
He has said that employees in New York and Los Angeles of both of those shows will be paid through year's end no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
He is paying everyone from both shows. That makes Worldwide Pants the first known company to guarantee its staff a paycheck during the writer's strike.
Good man. And, I mean, not a good man, but good businessman.
Right.
Because you pay a little, but you get a great reputation and people remember and they're very loyal. Secondly, that's my dream come true, to get paid to stay home. I've always wanted to get fired from a job and then have to stay home and hammer checks. And that now every one of those employees has to be praying and rubbing the rosary beads every night that come January 2nd, the strike is over. See, if the strike ends tonight, that sucks for those people. If somebody said to me, you'll get paid through the end of the year, whether the strike's over or not, and somebody called me the following morning and says, good news, strike's over, you would hear me yelling like I was doing a 80s action movie where birds flew away from the canopy of the rainforest. That's what you would hear from me. If I thought I could get paid and not leave the house until January 2nd, that would be awesome. On the other hand, there's the fear of when will we ever come back. So now for the Letterman people, we should hope that January 2nd is when they come back.
Yeah, because now he has fans, including his writers.
Right.
Right. I don't know about you, Adam, but I'm sure you weren't paid holidays when you worked construction. This job was the first time I was paid on a holiday, and I remember the entire Christmas day just going, I'm getting paid right now. I'm getting paid.
We had a holiday party one year on my construction job, which is we were working on a building literally down the street, about two blocks down on Wilshire, and we're all going to meet there at noon and drink a 12-pack off the tailgate of a guy's pickup truck. But by the time I got there, the beer was all gone.
Aww.
And here's how it would work when I work construction. You could work up until Christmas Day, and you would get paid, and then you didn't work Christmas Day, and you didn't get paid that day. So every holiday was ruined because you were living hand-to-mouth. You were just literally paycheck to paycheck, had my thing all budgeted based on a five-day-a-week worked week. And if I didn't get paid that one day, sure, I was happy to be enjoying Christmas, but I knew I was going to be short at the end of that month, and it screwed Christmas, and it was tough to buy presents when you knew you weren't making money.
Right.
Now, bad times.
I know that you guys both enjoy the sparkling repartee of award shows.
That stuff
is written by Writers Guild members, and award season is going to be upon us very soon. If this strike continues into December, the quality of the writing of the Grammys, the Golden Globes, and the Oscars could suffer. Most of the writing for those ceremonies begins in December when the nominations are announced. The next big award ceremony is the AMAs, the American Music Awards. Those go down Sunday night. That show script was already written previous to the strike. But because of the strike, Jimmy Kimmel, the host, will not be able to adjust the material to make it more topical unless, of course, he does it himself.
I went over to his house the other day. I saw him going over the script.
Yeah.
And I saw him punching up a joke, and I slapped the pen right out of his hand.
What are you doing, man?
And then he looked at me, a single tear rolled down his cheek. We both looked at the script, and there was just a smiley face put by a joke that I'd written. We hugged, then we 69.
Sorry, man. Oh, I feel better.
Then we hugged again. Then we 69 again. Then we ate.
Wow.
Then one last hug?
It was one last 69. And then we ate.
until the...
There are certain moves that really show affection.
Yeah. When you share an avocado. Now, until the official actual coroner's report is issued in 6 to 8 weeks, everything that we think we know about Kanye West's mother's death, we don't know for sure. We right. don't know if it's the fault of this Dr. Jan Adams, but mm-hmm. he certainly had his name dragged through the mud over the past 48 hours or so. He's had a few DUIs. Some of his patients have sued him. Now, a couple of the women he's worked on have come out to talk about their experience with Dr. Jan Adams. Here is Lori Ufandu.
Definitely not a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Here she talks about her terrible experience with Dr. Jan Adams from Access Hollywood.
This is not right. I go, there's something wrong. My wound is opened. And I literally had to hold myself up because the wound had opened up about this big. And on the sides, when I would walk, it would tear on the sides of the wound and it would hurt. It's hard to talk about this, you know that. That he continues to practice, and my heart goes out to Kanye West's family for the loss of his mother. That had someone paid attention early on.
Sensitive techno music in the background.
She may be walking around today. I didn't think I was getting the kind of treatment or level of care that I thought I needed to get. It just seemed odd that, you know, you would have a patient that would have this open wound and you wouldn't refer them to a specialist.
Yeah, the problem is there was enough of this stupid, somber techno music. There was a dearth of these stories before this. It was all the 5,000-pound man is going to get his man boobies cut off, and we had to see a guy get stippled Sharpie line underneath his D cup while Pat O'Brien stood there with his sweating orange down his forehead. I couldn't stand it because it is physically very hard to look at. I couldn't stand seeing people getting cut into and noses broken and black eyes.
Oh, I saw the pictures yesterday of this lady with the open gaping sores.
It is now game on. And again, for me, I'm an atheist, so I'm a simpleton. It's either offensive or it's not. When I see a beautiful woman's naked bust, guess who's not offended?
Not me.
Me and Danny. Oh, okay. And when I see the chick with the gaping wound in her side, it's hard to look at, especially at 7:35 in the evening when I'm sitting down for dinner. It's repugnant. And here's the question, you guys. Let's put it this way. If they have footage on Access Hollywood and somebody's being attacked by a great white shark and somebody is on the scuba boat filming it, you can see blood fill the water. You can see the shark chomp down on the chick's torso. You can see everything. If she's screaming and hollering and an S-bomb comes out, they would bleep it out.
Yeah.
They would not bleep out anything else. When they pulled her onto the deck, she had the huge open wound, they would show that. Isn't it offensive? I mean, doesn't it upset your sensibilities? Isn't that kind of ultimately what it's about? Seeing nudity, hearing an S-bomb. You can't show any nudity. Somebody might be offended. You can't use that. You can't say, God damn it, at 7:30 in the evening. That can't come out on Access Hollywood. Why? It would be offensive. Well, what about what I would call the silent majority of people who, when they see crazy broads and a boob job gone bad, botched boob jobs, or the guy who has so many rolls of flesh on his abdomen, he looks like the effing Michelin man standing there shirtless and having a guy drawing him with a Sharpie. And by the way, if I was a plastic surgeon, when that Sharpie came out, first few lines would be all business. We're going to remove some fat folds here.
Yeah.
Eventually, there'd be a huge penis drawn on the guy's back. I mean, there's no way. Because at a certain point, I'd have to go around to the guy's back and be like, okay, and what we're going to... He'd be like, Doc, what are we doing? Da-da-da-da. With the big kick me, I'm fat. Or the, you know, whatever it was. But the point is it offends you. And it's offensive. And once you're offended, does it matter what kind of offended? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
If it's nudity or a fat guy, and when you take your average person, which would they rather see? A little bit, much cleavage, or the guy with the too much cleavage getting it all hacked off
this
by the surgeon?
One of those moments where I can answer a question in 30 seconds or less.
All right.
Okay.
T?
Yeah.
Take off all your clothes, and then I'm going to punch you in the face as hard as I can and see which one bothers Adam.
Hmm.
Still, can you reverse the order?
Still feel like I could squeeze one off.
The violence is the intimidating thing that nobody
yeah,
wants.
Yeah, put me over the edge. Hey, T.
Yep.
Let's see. Debbie Mazar is calling in at 7:30 now. It's 7:30 now. I'm trying to figure out if we should take a break and make a little room for her, or if we should talk to her now and push through. I think we should take a break.
Sounds good.
Why don't you do that thing where you ramp it up?
You mean this thing? I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Tomorrow's news. Today, Teresa Strasser. UCNN.
Good times. Debbie Mazar, who I forgot was in Goodfellas. I think she was a
She was great.
She was great in that Oh Great Entourage and many other things as well. We'll talk to her next.
It's the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser.
Let me tell you something. You are a loser, baby. You know, you complain about the air, about the crime, about the social injustice of the world. And what the f*** do you do about it, huh? Nothing. You don't do shit about it. You just sit there.
And now Adam's favorite television publicist from HBO's Entourage, Debbie Mazar, on the Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, Debbie.
Yeah.
First, quickly, I've always said Debbie Mazar.
Yeah.
Should I be saying Mazar?
Well, technically, it was Mazarkiewicz back in the day.
Good call
so
on changing that.
Mazar, Mazar. I really don't care, to be honest with you, because I don't really know the correct pronunciation other than Mazarkiewicz.
I love that about you.
So, yeah, I'm good.
All right, so I can just keep going with Debbie Mazar.
That works.
Hey, Debbie, first off, congratulations on Entourage.
Thank you. Congratulations on your show.
Thank you. Entourage. And let me say this. A lot of people jumping on the Entourage bus lately, the bandwagon over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I was there first.
Oh, really?
I was watching from the very beginning. I watched the first season, and I took a little heat.
Uh-huh.
Because at the first season, it was considered a little lightweight. Like, hey, this is no Sopranos.
Well, no, it's not.
Uh-huh. No, but it wasn't supposed to be. But it took a little heat the first season, and then everyone started to come on board, I think, around the second season.
Yeah.
And it's now officially a juggernaut, yes?
Yes. I think they just needed to get their momentum going like any new show. You know how it goes.
Yeah. No, I can dig it, but certain new shows get a pass, and others, if you're going to do a new show on HBO, everyone is going to put their little jeweler's loop in and examine it under a microscope.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true, and I think my showrunners kind of figured out what the audience was responding to, which basically is the five guys, you know, like, you know, in Hollywood.
Yeah, I love you and Turtle. I love
Thank
him.
You.
I love him wanting some free Nikes and you busting his stone chops.
And you're not a huge fan of publicists in life, Adam.
No, I'm not. And I feel like Debbie captures it wonderfully on Entourage.
I don't like having a publicist either. I've had a couple of experiences, and I sort of just think that, you know, they're nasty because they deal with so much crap. I mean, Hollywood's all about tabloids, and, you know, the game is really difficult. It's not what it used to be. What you used to hire a publicist for was to convey good information or squash a scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just kind of like, you know, for me, I have a love-hate, so I have a lot of fun playing them.
Yeah.
I never had one.
Yeah, well, you don't need one.
I can't keep my friggin' name out of the paper no matter how hard I try.
Yeah, you generate your own press. Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, it's good if you need it, but otherwise, who wants to be in the magazines? I don't know. I don't. I'm not a, you know, we're not models.
Well,
I do.
Debbie, speaking...
You want to be a model?
Oh, yeah. No, I just want to be a whore. I just want to be in any magazine for any reason.
Well, the thing is, if you're not worried about keeping a scandal out of the paper, then you really don't need one. And throwing Johnny Fairplay over your head is good,
yeah,
good publicity.
What are you gonna picture?
Be honest with you, Danny. If any of you want any press, just go walk down Robertson. I did it the other day, and you'll end up on TMZ. Boom, it's done.
Yeah. Good to know. Unfortunately, yeah. Publicity
I didn't
doesn't...
know, but I was accosted. It was really crazy.
Debbie Mazar, nose picker. Next.
Go shopping at Kitson or someplace like that.
Yep. Hey, still friends with Madonna?
I am. I just saw her last week.
Mm. How is
Back
she?
Back in London. She's doing great.
How is that? Is it surreal or are you used to it? I feel like if I was hanging out with Madonna, it would be almost weird to the point of distraction. I'd be excited to do it, but it would freak me out.
Well, we got beyond that. I mean, like 25 years ago when she first got famous, it was freaky and people change their personalities when they get mega famous like that. But at this point, we've morphed. There's been boyfriends and husbands and children and deaths and religions. And
right.
So much has come down, especially with her being the megastar that she is, that and she's been a star so long, you kind of get used to it. And, you know, she doesn't treat me any different. We still fight and we still, you know, have fun and laugh. So,
you met her many years ago. How did you guys meet back in the day?
I was working at Danceteria and she stepped into my elevator.
Mm-hmm.
I was the operator, and we started talking, and a great song came on when we hit the second floor, a disco song. She goes, "You want to dance?" And I went, yeah, why not? I parked the elevator, took a spin on the dance floor. We exchanged numbers, and we started making like a regular thing and going dancing, and we're both single and having fun in those days. So those, you know, it was the early 80s in New York City.
Mm. Sure, you need like a wingman.
Huh?
You need a wingman when you're going out.
What's
dancing.
A wingman?
That's your friend that you take with you that helps, you know, so you're not alone.
Oh, you mean the gay guy?
Well, could be.
Gay guys make great wingmen.
Only men to wait. Yeah, if you have a straight guy with you, other guys aren't going to wrap you.
Right, you need
a
girl.
If you have a gay guy with you, guys aren't going to wrap you. I go out with my girlfriends or solo, but I mean, I'm married now, so I don't even go out.
Well, so, Debbie, were working.
That's the ticket to staying married.
You're working at the Danceatorium or the Danceteria?
Work in the elevator.
I was working at Danceteria at the time, yeah.
Now, what is that?
It was a disco. It was a club, you know, multi-level 80s, you know, performance, art, music, food. You know, it was like I wasn't a waitress, but I worked in elevator.
So you're like working the scene over there. Do you have a cute little outfit?
Oh, it was the clubs in the 80s, you know, so yeah, fishnets, men's suits. You know, in the 80s, anything
went. Yeah, you're dressing like Madonna. Before Madonna.
Was dressing like me.
Yeah.
Okay. No, and then, Madonna was wearing rubber bracelets and lace stockings with holes in them, and I was wearing 50s zoot suits or like 50s. I was into the 50s.
And did you say to yourself, this chick's got it at the time?
What Madonna had at the time was a self-confidence and a sexuality that I've never seen in my life before I met her.
Mm-hmm.
She had something. She had something that I was just blown away by. It wasn't necessarily talent, but it was this confidence that, you know, I knew she was going to go somewhere just because she thought who she was so much that she convinced other people.
So you just hitched your wagon to her team and 20...
Not at all, actually. I mean, I wasn't... She had no team for me to hook on to. I mean, you know, once she discovered that she was becoming a star, she hired, like, you know, the famous makeup artist instead of, like, me who was doing makeup at the time. But we stayed, you know, like, we were friendly, but, you know, in terms of business, you know, she's out for herself, and she does her thing, and that's it.
Well, let's speak of business for one second. The joy of giving is what we're here for. It's a MasterCard holiday promotion. How does it work?
Well, basically, when you sign with your WAMU debit MasterCard from now till January 2nd, you can and you're automatically entered, and you can win two prizes, which one is for you. And the other one is for you to give away to a friend.
Mm.
So if you have your MasterCard and you're going shopping, bam, you're entered, and then you can get a free vacation.
Mm.
Plus a vacation for your friend or a free car. Like, major gifts, and you get to give one to whoever you want to.
Well, this is good, because I know a lot of rich white guys. Like, for instance, I was talking to Jimmy Kimmel the other day, and he said, I have a fleet of golf carts, but I need a smaller golf cart to get me to my fleet.
Sure, of course.
Oh,
he was pretty despondent over it, and I said, buddy, I'll see what I can do. So if my ship comes in, I'll get the golf cart and give the second one to Kimmel so he can get to his ranch of golf carts.
Well, then you need to go use that WAMU MasterCard and go do it, because I'm telling you, you'll get this. You might be one of the lucky ones. And the great thing is that it's every single week. So it's not like there's one winner at the end of the year. It's every week there's a new winner.
Well, speaking of every week, we're in the throes of the writer's strike. Entourage, one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
You guys are due to go back into production in January.
Yeah.
Which would mean, well, a couple things, and maybe you know and maybe you don't know. How many scripts are in the can, if any?
We don't even know that when we are shooting. We don't know what he's going to write for the next episode. We don't even know if he's going to have a continuous storyline. I mean, for instance, I was very, very pregnant when I did season 3.
Right.
And we never knew who baby daddy was, where she came from, who she was involved with, where the baby went. I mean, I never knew anything. And to his credit, he doesn't feel like he needs to explain.
Right.
And he doesn't care if it doesn't make sense, because it just works.
Right.
People like the show. It's about five guys, you know. It's So I don't know how many he's got. Knowing how he operates, though, he's probably got several. Mm-hmm. But we go back in January.
Speaking to Debbie Mazur, by the way, about Entourage, are you confident you're going to go back in January?
No, I'm not confident about when I go back, and I'm never confident with Entourage in terms of how they're going to use me, because they can never sort of, figure that one out. So, I just wait for the phone call.
Well, I got to say, they use you like my Hungarian grandfather used to use paprika.
Yeah.
Not in big handfuls, but a light dusting brings a zesty flavor.
Well, that's a nice way to put it.
You know what I mean? Just a little sprinkling of Debbie Mazur here and a little pinch of Debbie Mazur over there, and it really brings the flavor out in the stew.
We should give her a thicker, richer storyline, though.
Well, you can tell that to my writers or to each. Write a letter.
Well, I'll go out in the street, get a bullhorn, and tell them.
How about we just say enough of this paprika crap and give me a big meatball of Deb.
All right, give me a big Debbie Mazur meatball.
Speaking of, I'm still dealing with my shock that Debbie's not Italian.
Guess what? I'm Italian as of 2 weeks ago for real. I became an Italian citizen. I have dual citizenship.
No way.
Congratulations.
But even though I'm Latvian, everyone thinks I'm Italian because of all the movies I've done where I play Italian. But my family's from Riga. I'm first generation.
I got to tell you, as I look down at your list here and I see Singles and I see The Doors and I see Goodfellas, especially The Doors and Goodfellas, two of my favorite movies of all time. And you can go out and see a good movie and walk away and go, that was funny or that was good or that was exciting. But you walked away from The Doors going, I feel weird. I want to sit down for a minute.
I actually got cut out of that movie. I did it, and then Oliver wrote me a nice letter that, he loved it, but the storyline wasn't.
I didn't want to ask, but I was trying to picture you were in The Doors.
Me too.
I figured you played the drums.
Who did you play?
I played the wife of, what's his name, Frank. One of the Doors, members, I forgot his name, the actor's name, Frank something.
Trying to think.
But actually, funny you should mention.
Kevin Dillon was in
that. That is where I met Kevin Dillon.
Right.
Mm. And
from Entourage.
He was a movie star before his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People forget. But you didn't get cut out of Goodfellas. That much I know.
That's my claim to fame. I think I was on Love Line pretty soon. Was Love Line right around that period when it came out? You were in L.A. then.
Let's see. The Doors must have been 90. I'm sorry. Goodfellas must have been 93, 94? 91. Was it that long ago?
Yeah.
God, it's weird when it's approaching. Is everyone sitting down? 20 years. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Awesome movie. All right. Hey, Debbie. The joy of giving.
Joy of giving. Go to wamu.com/holiday for more information.
Thanks, baby doll.
Thank you.
Come in and see us in person soon.
I will. Invite me.
All right. You're officially invited, Debbie Mazur. I love somebody who doesn't care how their name's pronounced.
I like that, too.
I love that
what
person.
What does she care?
My name's Corinne. I just want to punch them in the face.
Yeah. There's nothing worse, and I don't know why. There's really, I could meet a guy, and I could go, hey, man, what are you doing? The guy could go, nothing. And I could go, why? And he could go, I was in prison for vehicular manslaughter for the last 9 years, and I would be cool with the guy. But if that guy then said, hey, my name's Christopher, and stuck his hand out, and I said, nice to meet you, Chris. And he went, it's Christopher. I would want to kill him. I would not want to be in the same room with him.
That's a worse crime in some ways.
For me, way more egregious than you getting drunk and hitting that school bus with the special needs kids in it and have it burst into flame. Way worse for me.
One accident.
One guy I could hang with.
Yeah.
The other guy could not hang with.
Huge dude.
And you show me the guy whose name is Andy and you call him Alan and he doesn't care.
That's the guy. For you, yeah.
That's the guy you meet at the party, and his name is Andy, and you call him Alan 6 times, and then at the very end of the evening, one of your other friends points out that's not his name, and you go over to sort of apologize and go, "Hey, sorry, guy, I didn't know." And he goes, "Ah, no problem." Love that guy.
That's what I do. Remember with Dante when people come up and say, "What a beautiful little girl." Why put him on the spot?
That's right.
Oh,
yeah,
thank you. My
wife's a dick and won't cut his hair. why are your feelings?
All right, we're going to take ourselves a break. The great Oswaldo Castillo. Nobody ever mistook him for a lady. Not with that beard and those big hairy forearms. Ozzy is doing a little singing. A little Ozzy sings. Ozzy, do we have a quick tease?
I'm going off the rail in the crazy train.
That's right, he is. 866-901-ADAM. Nicaraguan, name that tune. Win yourself some Ozzy Osbourne tickets. We'll do that next.
For a decade, Friday, November 30th at Staples.
All aboard!
Call 866-901-ADAM. Nicaraguan, name that tune. On the Adam Carolla Show.
I wonder if Ozzy has any idea what's going on. You know, one minute the guy's working with my buddy Ray.
Oh,
yeah. Doing concrete work.
I thought about that.
The next minute we're building a gym. The next minute he's doing a movie with me, and now he's doing morning radio.
Yeah.
I'd just love to hear how he explains it when he writes letters back to his native Nicaragua.
Right. Do you think he writes letters back to his...
I don't know if they use carrier pigeon.
Smoke signal.
It's, no, it's even weirder because wasn't he tortured by Sandinistan rebels?
Yeah, now he's come to the United States to torture me.
With his pronunciation.
He likes to... I've known him for six... I got to tell you quickly. Oh, I swear to God, this is the kind of stuff that drives me insane. I have a movie. The movie's coming out now, beginning of March. And I've been working on some...
It's called The Hammer.
Called The Hammer, thank you. I'll keep everyone posted. It's a good movie, but I'm trying to make it even a little bit better. So I've been working at night with my buddy, The Wheeze, who's also an editor, and we're doing little tweaks and little pieces, just that thing that only I would know from making the film. And there was a scene, and there is a scene in the movie where Ozzy is supposed to say, yab, yab, yab. I wrote it in the script. Now, all the Mexican trainers I always had would say, yab, yab, hands up, yab. Yeah, they weren't saying jab, or they were trying to say jab, but they said yab, yab, yab. And so I said, all right. So I put it in the script, and I said, Ozzy, now's your chance. Camera will be on you. You say yab, yab, yab. And for the first time in his life, the guy sounded like Kelsey Grammer. He was like, jab, jab, jab.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham.
It sounded like Graham Wellington. And I said, Ozzy, yab. It's yab, yab, yab. And he was like, jab, jab, jab. And I was like, you mispronounce every single syllable that passes your lips. I mispronounce words when I stand too close to you. You haven't pronounced my name right in 16 years. You can't mispronounce jab. You can't say yab, jab. Yab, jab. And I started thinking, he's got to be effing with me at a certain point. And by the way, the only reason I wrote down yab is because everyone with a Spanish accent that ever trained me in boxing said yab. They never said jab. Ozzy couldn't do it. 15 takes of me saying, Ozzy, just say yab, jab.
Oh.
Couldn't do it. So the one time I put a camera on him and wanted him to mispronounce a word, could not do it. And as I said, whether it's Ozzy mispronouncing that or, in fact, pronouncing it correctly, or Schwarzenegger saying California, each time you toggle back and forth, you get angry, right? You go, it's not California, it's California.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, I just did it both ways. And if I ever moved to Bavaria or wherever the guy's from, and they told me it's pronounced this way, I would just do it that way.
Yeah. It's only fair.
And then everyone always rushes to their defense and goes, yeah, that's not how they pronounce it. And you go, I know. But
don't care.
They'll just modify it a little bit to show they care. All right. Schwarzenegger really mispronounces the state that he represents. Is there not a person in his camp with the huevos to come up to the Terminator and go, look, I'm going to do for you, California, what they tried to do with Shaq with free throws. We are going to stay late after the news conference one effing afternoon, and you are going to say California 7,000 times. And when we're done, you'll have no other way to pronounce it. That'll be it.
You will not be Bach.
We're going to go to the free throw line. I'm going to get a bucket of Californias, and we're going to sit here until night falls on the city. Don't you think he could do that?
It never took with Shaq in the free throws.
Well, maybe you're right. But maybe I can get Shaq to pronounce California.
There you go.
All right, where were we? Ah, we have an intro.
Nicaragua, Nick Nighton. You win ticket for see Ozzy Osbourne.
He bit the head off a tamale when he was at my house yesterday. Hey, ironically named Ozzy.
Yeah, hello.
Oh, this is going to be good. Is your name really Ozzy?
Yes, it is.
See.
And your big Ozzy Osbourne fan?
Yeah, it was kind of hard because I don't think I'm a fan just because of my name.
Oh, I see. That is hard.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fan not just because of your name, but because of his music.
Well, yeah, he makes great music.
All right. What do you do for a living, Ozzy?
Well, right now.
Well, you know he's a listener.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way he said it, well, right now.
All right. No time for work, but plenty of time for the radio show. Hey, Ozzy.
Yes, Adam.
You ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Your hero is going to be at the Staples Center Friday, November 30th. So it's coming up. You ready? Here we go.
I'm going off the rail in the crazy train.
crazy train?
Sí, es bueno.
All right. Crazy story with his guitar player when they were on the road.
What happened?
Was it Randy Rhodes?
It was Randy Rhodes.
The guy was like a phenom guitar player, and he was really young.
He used to play in Quiet Riot and quit to go play with Ozzy.
Guy was a great rock guitar player.
And a stud and had all the chicks in the world.
And he was really young at the time, and somewhere out on the road with Ozzy, they stopped somewhere. And he got into a private plane, and I think they got in with a tour manager or pilot or whatever, and the lead guitar player, and I guess they had a few pops, and they thought it'd be funny while Ozzy was sleeping in the tour bus to go ahead and buzz the tower. And they buzzed the tower a little bit too close, and they caught the tour bus, and the guys in the plane died.
Ew.
Yeah.
Imagine you're taking a nap in your tour bus, and all of a sudden it's like, huh? What was that? That was your lead guitar player catching on fire?
I think it's kind of cool that a guy named Rhodes was killed by a bus.
All right, should we...
Oh, sweet irony!
Shall we go to Chris? Chris?
Yes, sir. How you doing, American Genius?
Doing great. Thanks for acknowledging my genius. You ready to play?
I am ready to play.
Let's do it.
Listen, I want you hear him. Back at the moon.
May have been saved at the end there.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris?
That really saved me at the end. I'm going to go with Bark at the Moon.
Sí, es bueno.
Nice job, Chris.
I got it wrong.
Bark at the Moon.
I was sure it was Howl at the Moon. I don't know why. I'd have missed that one, buddy.
Well, but when Ozzy said back at the moon, you must have known.
Yeah, of course. It's all cleared up for me.
David?
Yeah, I'm here.
You ready to play?
Yes, sir, I am.
These are getting tougher as we go. Here we go.
Hello, world. Here I song, Tari singing. Come on, get happy.
Wow, that's a tough one there.
Oh,
like, come on, get happy.
It's bueno.
We toss a curveball every once in a while.
Yeah, that's not a complete curveball, and I'll tell you why. Mm. He's actually sung that to me.
Really?
Yes.
The Ozzy Osbourne.
Weirder than Ozzy Osbourne. You know who else sang that song to me?
Who?
Spike Lee.
Really?
Yeah.
He's a Partridge fan?
Yeah, no, his sisters were, and they used to fight over who got to watch the Knicks, and he used to watch the Partridge Family, and he put it in one of his movies. And he came up to me at some party and started singing it. If you don't think that's a weird night out.
Surreal.
Especially when you're as high as I was. When I turned to the person next to me and I said, dude, I swear to God, I think Spike Lee's singing Come On, Get Happy. Is that really happening? And he said, yeah, it's really happening. You're cool.
Danny was like, I saw that lawn jockey move. The one with the weird glasses.
It was actually at the Grammys.
Who?
And Gretchen said, that's Spike Lee over there. And I said, where? And she goes, the black guy in the hat. And narrowed it down for me.
All right. True. Listen, you brothers complain all you want, but you can wear whatever hat you want at any time.
Hat and punity.
You wear a fur top hat. You could
enough is enough.
purple fur top hat. No one would ever ask you why or what or what are you doing. Could you imagine if you put on like a Mad Hatter, like you're in some Tom Petty video from the 80s, and you just put a purple top hat on and you walked out of the house, you'd be tackled by all your white neighbors. But if you're a brother,
wrestled to the ground.
Nobody say a word. All right, David.
Mm-hmm.
Nice thinking on your feet, brother.
All right.
We'll see you at the Staples Center on the 30th. All right, let's go ahead and talk to Tony. Two more to go. Tony?
Morning.
You ready to play?
I'm telling you, this would be great. It would be a great going-away present.
Where are you going?
Prison.
I'm going back on active duty December 3rd.
Mm. Where are you going back to?
I'm actually heading back to the East Coast to Georgia.
Get on your knees. Come back. He tried to pull one over on us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back on active duty. Who thought Iraq? Yeah. All of us. And maybe Afghanistan. He's going to Jersey. He's going to go to Wildwood and ride the rides.
He's at Georgia.
Same place.
What's going on over there?
Oh, it's running wild in the streets. Adam, are you crazy?
Why are you going to that hotbed of terrorist activity known as Georgia?
Too many, I don't know, hillbillies, rednecks, I guess. I don't know.
Look, either way, you're miserable, right?
Either way.
All right. If you're in the service and you're miserable about where you're being deployed, I don't care if you're going to Honolulu. If you're miserable about it, my heart goes
and
out to you.
And you're serving our country
right. While
surfing? Still cool with me.
And look, I don't care if you're in the rear with the gear. As long as you're supporting the guys that are the tip of the spear, I think that rhymed.
I did.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Well, what does Tony
be in the front with the grunt.
What does Tony do for the military, in the military?
It's called signal support. Watch the troops on radar, good and bad.
He's in the Joy Division.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I got that.
All right, Tony, sound elated about it. Let's play.
Elohim, my, can he see or is he blind?
Oh, boy.
It's going to be a tough one. I'm going to say that's Iron Man.
Sí, es bueno.
You know. Tony knows his radar and he knows his Ozzy. All right, let's do one more. Let's see. Brenda.
Ooh.
We got a chick here from Rancho Cucamonga. Brenda?
Hi.
Hey, sweetie P, you ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready.
Let's do it, Ozzy.
You're the best around. Nothing gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing gonna ever keep you down.
Oh, no.
You know
is it
this?
Mama, I'm coming home?
Oh, it's Malo.
By the way, Brenda, what do you expect? Yes, it is Mama, I'm coming home.
She had to take a guess.
All right, I'll give you one more chance. This is the toughest one on the page.
All right,
one more chance.
Mr. Crowley, what went on in your head?
Mr. Crowley.
Sí, es bueno.
Wow, I didn't even know that one. This wasn't a hit, was it?
Brenda, you must be a big Ozzy fan.
Used to be.
Here's what you get with these best ofs when we do the rock songs. You either get the hits or you get the hits off Dawson's bong.
Yes.
Or Dawson.
Those are the greatest hits.
Gets really high, and he has his great, Dawson's greatest hits. Those are the songs you've never heard of that are in Dawson's hits. They're called Dawson's greatest hits.
I waited for you, man.
From the back of the bowl.
It's not called a hit off the bong. It's a...
draw.
A rip or something?
A rip. A rip to bong. Yeah, and Dawson's, we should have Dawson's B-sides, because the B don't stand for second. It is bong.
You're the best around. Nothing gonna ever keep you down.
Now, look, we all know Ozzy Osbourne. Does anyone know that Mr. Crowley song?
I don't know his work that
Mike
well.
Mike says yes.
I put that on the greatest bong hits.
Obviously, Dawson's greatest bong hits.
We'll put that together for Christmas.
All right. Well, either way, you guys are all winners, even the losers. Let's play an outro. When we come back, we were speaking early this morning. Man, it was like 2 hours ago. We were talking about our worst year ever. And I said, well, it'd be a toss-up. I've whittled it down to about 31. But somewhere in my top seven would be the 10th grade. And Teresa said her 10th grade was miserable, too. And Danny said his was as well, even though he could beat it. And I might be able to beat my 10th grade with maybe my 21st or 22nd year. But 10th was bad. So I think what we'll do is we'll pick that year.
I had a terrible 10th grade.
You were in the 10th grade.
You're 15.
Yeah, and we'll go through the trials and tribulations. What made yours the worst? What made ours the worst? Screw you. I want to do ours. We'll do our 10th grade year. We'll go through all. We'll tell you what year it was and what exactly we were doing, where we were at, what we were thinking. We'll do that next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. Earlier this morning, Adam mentioned that the 10th grade was the worst year of his life. Now we'll hear from the rest of the cast. The worst year of your life, right now on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, it was 1979 going into 1980. I was 15, turning 16 at the end of the year. This started off early in the morning when I was talking about failing driver's ed. That was the cherry on top of the S Sunday, known as my 10th grade year. Yeah. It was bad, stayed bad, and ran bad all the way through. For me, I was always dumb. I was always a horrible student. I could barely read, so school wasn't my thing, but I was always really good at sports, particularly football. And I had played 7 years of Pop Warner football. And the way Pop Warner football works is the same group of guys just grow older, and the same group of coaches, usually some of them, most of them, parents of said guys, will go up each year with their kid.
That was Pop Warner.
So I had a saint named Mr. Gallagher. Don't even know his first name. Just Mr. Gallagher. And Mr. Gallagher, with his son Dan, ironically, would move up every year. And I started when I was 7. So it was a nice situation because Mr. Gallagher knew who you were. And he knew you were real good when you were 11. And he assumed you'd be just as good at 12. And I'd walk in and have my position waiting for me because we just kept moving up with the same group. Well, this was different. Now I'm going to North Hollywood High and Mr. Gallagher's left behind. And I get Fred Nielsen, who does not know who I am and is not a fan.
For you, that must be extraordinarily painful.
Very difficult. So now I'm just on an even par with the other 80 guys that are going out for the B football team over there at North Hollywood High. That was your first year football team. And I didn't exactly have a growth spurt, and I wasn't exactly as good as I was all those years I played Pop Warner football.
And bad day, or actually lost talent over the summer or something?
You've seen my father.
Yeah.
Okay. I had no jeans to kick into. I had this Super Denim Robot had better jeans to get into than the Ace Man. Little timely reference there from JCPenney circa 1974. But my dad is a wimp. My dad is the least athletic guy I know. And puberty is like you getting on steroids. It's like an injection of steroids. Your nads drop, your pubes grow, and all of a sudden you start getting veins in your arms, and you start getting bulges and muscles where you didn't know you had them before. You're not smooth anymore. Well, I was always the most talented kid I knew, but now everyone else is kicking into their genes. They're on the juice, and my juice is a 135-pound guy with rolled shoulders who's never put on cleats in his life. So I'm not kicking into anything.
Yeah, hello?
I was still good enough from all my experience that I could play, but I was getting pushed around by scary guys that were starting to grow beards with Adam's apples where I was still in my wuss phase. I was still half a chick, and everyone grew, and everyone got strong, and all of a sudden I was getting my ass kicked, and now the only thing I'm good at, I'm not good at anymore. I'm riding the pine. I'm sitting on the bench. So now it's awesome because I can't read, and I'm a horrible student, and I'm sitting on the bench of my 10th grade football team. And the worst is, it all came to a head one day when we're playing a little hoop and we're screwing around, and all my friends essentially just said to me, I don't understand what happened to you. You used to be really good at football. Why are you sitting on the bench? What happened? You're getting your ass kicked. You were always the best guy. You were the guy who was the best at football. They wanted to know what happened. And I was 15 and a half, and I just about broke down and cried. No chicks liked me. I just got done failing Mr. Diliberti's biology class. I was such a horrible student in biology. It was like way over my head. I couldn't read. I couldn't figure out anything. I had one chick that liked me from ceramics class. The problem is, as I've said before, she was the daughter of the plastics teacher, Mr. Mallon, from the ninth grade over at Walter Reed, and he was a colossal a-hole.
Right.
And even though she was the one girl on the planet that thought I was cute, I couldn't stomach her because I kept thinking about her dwarf a-hole dad.
Wow.
Who made everyone miserable. So the one chick who had an interest, I couldn't get past. I'd see her stupid dad's fat, angry face yelling at me in plastics class every time I looked at her. So
wouldn't
that was that.
Slow me down.
Really?
No.
I probably should have done it just to spite the old man. Right. Later on, went on to fail driver's ed, and it was not looking too promising for the ace man. But T, Dooch, how'd you fare in the 10th grade?
Dooch?
I'll tell you, mine was easy. I pulled into the 10th grade. My mom and dad got in a divorce. My dad had literally destroyed our home using tools to destroy our home.
Really?
Spent or gave all our money away so my mother would have nothing.
And he vandalized his own property?
The house that we bought for $50,000 on San Feliciano Drive, by the time we sold it, was worth about $700,000.
Really?
We sold it for $30,000.
Really?
He took a chainsaw to it.
Really?
Yeah. He just here's bitch, here's what you'll get. You want your half? He's one of those guys. You want your half? And he sold the house.
I got your half. Yeah. Wow.
One of those guys. So we had nothing. And I couldn't get to my part of traveling money, which, by the way, only turned out to be $72,000.
Right.
Just get that out of the way. But we couldn't get to it. We couldn't touch it. So
you couldn't get to it because you weren't 18 yet?
I was in a
trust. Yeah, I was never emancipated. Mm-hmm. I was just allowed to do stuff.
Right.
So they just said, go. So we have nothing. And we pull into Cal Prep, like the richest private school. Because I'm still really famous.
Right.
You can't miss Danny Partridge's face. I'm only 15.
Right.
The show just ran its last season when I was 14. It's still in reruns.
Yeah.
And we have nothing. But I have to go to this exclusive school because if I go to a regular school, people are freaking out.
Right.
So my mom decides to make our Volkswagen Bug, our 10-year-old Volkswagen Bug, cooler by cutting out flowers out of shower curtains and shellacking them to our Volkswagen to make it look cool.
People used to stick flowers to the outside of cars.
Yes. Yeah.
How high were we?
I don't know, but I pulled in, and everybody knew I was coming. It's always that Dave Bonducci's coming because I'd already been in trouble, plus I was the guy in the Partridge Valley. First face I see, Michael Jackson.
Really?
And I go, I'm the poor white trash at this rich black school. Of course, when you look at Michael, you decided, oh, wait, I'm not at a black school.
Can I ask you this?
You can ask me anything you want,
sir. If you never heard another story or saw a picture of Michael Jackson, even though you went to high school with him, if somebody just took you and froze you in a block ice next to Disney's head, and then they thawed you out and they introduced you to Michael Jackson today?
Yeah. I would flee.
You would say, I've never met this man in my
whole life.
I've never met him before.
And I would say, I would assume that some kind of evolution had happened and it didn't go well while I had been frozen.
Horrible apocalyptic future.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But then there was Chastity Bono was there. And at this point, this probably means something.
You
want to
talk about that should have just been called, it should have been called, like they have the high school for performing arts.
Yeah.
That should have been the high school for retarded sexuality. The Bonaducci humping everything that moved. You have Chastity Bono over there, and don't get me started with Michael Jackson.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
And Tony DeFranco. And
from the DeFranco family.
From the DeFranco family was there.
Heartbeat.
That was a big
name. It's a love beat and a love beat. It's a good vibration. Okay.
I like it.
Dude, are you gay?
Yeah. So I'm in school with all these celebrities, and you don't just get canceled and move on in life. You're canceled and therefore washed up. mm-hmm. especially at my age. So I had to walk in the shellacked Volkswagen bus past all these superstars, the sons of superstars, the sons of heads of foreign countries. So there's Secret Service everywhere talking into their sleeves and guys with automatic weapons that they're trying to hide under their jackets but failing. And I'm just the big loser has been.
Yeah.
It was possibly the worst year of my life.
T?
Well, I'll just hit the highlights. Okay, between 14 and 15, puberty was not good to me. I was kind of cute when I was 14, when I was a freshman, and I was a ballet dancer from age 4 to 14 when I decided to quit, or they decided I should quit. And so something happened from quitting dancing and puberty where I looked normal, and then the next year I just looked awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just, my body just was, it was confused by puberty. Mm-hmm. And I just had terrible skin, and I was chubby. And I had this best friend my freshman year, but she broke up with me.
It's almost like your body, some people do this, was rejecting puberty.
Yeah, it couldn't. It was like, what's happening? Like
somebody transplanted a liver and it wasn't working.
Right.
Yes.
It was rejecting puberty. And just for this one year, and my freshman year, I had this best girlfriend. And this, I don't think this happens with boys, but we were almost like a couple. We were so close. And she broke up with me for cooler people.
Mm.
So I didn't have my best friend. And then I ran away towards the end of the year when I was 15. And
Where'd you run away to?
I ran away to stay with my friend's house. His parents were kind of liberal. They didn't really realize I was staying there. And so they were Canadian.
It's called being high.
They were Canadian or high. So
high
I was staying with
Canadian.
Him.
Mm-hmm.
And here, this is the sad part.
Him?
He was a guy. Yeah, he was not a boyfriend. He was just a friend.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned biology. Well, school was the only thing I loved because it was stable. It was dependable. If you study, you'll get an A. You don't even have to be smart. You just have to be prepared and hardworking.
Yeah. You're that nerd.
I loved biology, and it was finals time, and I was in AP Bio, and it was a really, really hard
class.
How's
AP Bio?
Advanced placement. You get college credit.
New show on Fox.
And so
I know the AP Mini Mart. That's
so
what I know.
It was right before finals. It was really competitive, and it was a college textbook. I had to sell the textbook to San Francisco City College bookstore for the $22 so I could have lunch money. Therefore, I couldn't study for my final. I didn't do as well.
That's a good story,
Hold
though.
It back.
I will tell everyone the lesson, though.
What is it?
Well,
you didn't sell plasma for crack?
I sold my book back for crack. Like, I needed more carbs. I bought all, like, bakery bread with it. It was already chubbed.
I was a miserable as well. But here's the good. Here's the lesson for me. I, at the end or somewhere near the end of the 10th grade, my most miserable year, was told by the B football coach, the junior varsity football coach, hey, you know, he could see that I had potential, that I knew what I was doing. He said, keep your weight down and you can start next year on the B team. Now, why keep your weight down? Well, the way it worked was once you got over like 170 pounds, you couldn't play on the B team anymore. They would put you up to the varsity team. It's confusing, but you kind of get it.
Yeah, I can get that. Yeah.
So he said, hey, you're a good football player. You just didn't get to start this year. You keep your weight down and you'll get to, you know, stay under 170 pounds and you'll be starting next year. And I thought, tempting, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to get my weight up and I'm going to varsity next year. Now, there's no chance I'll start on varsity next year because I didn't start on the JV team this year. But if I go to varsity next year, and I practice real hard, and I work out real hard, and I eat tons of hard-boiled eggs, and that's all I would eat. Then, when I'm a senior, I'll be able to start on varsity, and that's all I wanted. Well, the point is I said, Mr. Smith, by the way, my B football coach. I started eating about 10 hard-boiled eggs a day, never left the weight room, and got up from about 140 and change to about 185 my next year, and I went to varsity. And, of course, just like I thought, they weren't interested in the guy who didn't start on the junior varsity team, but a guy named Mike Utley. He got hurt, and about two games into the season, I started, and I started the rest of the season. and then was a star when I got to my senior year. Now, the point is I could have not eaten, taken the easy road, made it fast, and just started the next year. But I said, screw it. I'll just have another year of sitting on the bench, and then when I'm a senior, I'll start on the varsity. So the point is delayed gratification, everybody.
See, I think, you know, I've learned such a lesson from Adam's sad tale of woe to what he did and how hard he applied himself that I would like to throw on the end of mine that after the 10th grade, I went on to be a really famous busboy, then completely homeless, and didn't work a day till I was 30 years old. You got a happy ending to yours?
I would like to say I went on to, I also put on 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I left out the part where I gained weight so fast and in such a weird way that the principal called me in and said, I've heard that you're pregnant.
Oh,
and we need to talk about it.
No.
I'm not kidding. Mr. Cutaback called me in. And first of all, I was a virgin. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not pregnant.
Well, that means the Messiah's coming out in about 6 months. But and we got to hang on to
him. Here's a happy ending. I went on junior year. I don't know what happened.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I just want to collective eat me out of.
You were called into the principal's office to discuss your pregnancy in the 10th grade?
The only thing I was never called into the principal's office for was to discuss
and
my
pregnancy.
I was
already one of five scholarship kids at a private school, just like Dan. I went to a ritzy private school, but I was on a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And people already looked at you a little, you know, askew. He called me in to say he'd heard I was pregnant.
Sure.
And did I want to talk about it?
I wish you were dead.
Mm-hmm.
I wished he was. If I could have killed him with my bare hands.
How red was his face?
He's calling me a fat slut.
I mean, I know you're choking him, but before you choked him, how red was his face when he said, I'm not pregnant? Did he believe you?
No. I have heard, and some people are concerned.
Hold on, we have an announcement. Hey, listen, fish sticks in the cafeteria today. I mean, this is your principal. Fish sticks in the cafeteria. Also, we're having a pep rally out there. Let's go ahead and cheer the team on. And Teresa Strasser, not sure what her nationality is. It looks suspect to me, and I'm pretty sure she's knocked up. So, well, the guy who took one for the team, go ahead and step up. I'd like to A, shake his hand, and B, offer him some Norplant for his next conquest. So I'm going to need to see Teresa, I'm not chubby, I'm pregnant, Strasser, and Mercy Mission Dude in my office in about 10 minutes, please.
I've never told that to anybody in my life. Not my mom, not my friends, not anybody.
Awesome. God, at my school, the announcements were something to the effect of, the Quaaludes going around are actually second all and really bad for you, and I think Debbie Liebenstein has crabs. Those are the kind of announcements we got at my little school. But come in, you're pregnant to a non-pregnant
girl. It
really
girl. Is like saying...
God, how do you not blow your brains out at that age?
Well, I was very tempted.
I'd have killed
every
myself.
Day I was very suicidal.
Is it because he saw the rapid weight gain?
I think it was a combination of the weight gain and the social isolation.
And how many...
I was only friends with a couple guys.
Why don't you go back to your home on Whore Island?
I thought, honestly, at the time, I couldn't articulate this, but I think he thought I was slutty just because I was from, like, the wrong
bad
side of the
neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right. And how many kids were at your school, do you know?
300.
Oh, 300.
Yeah, 68 in my class.
Danny had, like, 80. Four and a half.
80, but it went from 7th to 12th.
Oh, right. See, there was, like, 2.5 kids in every grade.
Less than a dozen.
My school had like 3,500 kids, so nobody knew who anyone was. You just walked down the halls, and it was just a throng of humanity. I mean, the most attention I got was when Mr. Gregory fired, or I should say, failed me from driver's ed. That was the most one-on-one time I've ever had with a teacher.
Now, this is a better moment than I thought, because now I'm thinking, you know how when puberty hits, you start to get muscles and veins and bumps where you don't have any? Mine hit at about 42 years old when I found this guy at the gym and had a wad full of money. Yeah. Puberty was good to me.
T, I had no idea that you were accused of being pregnant.
I've never told a single soul. I don't know why. I just deleted it from my mind.
No wonder you're a dangerous psychopath.
Got another announcer.
Hey,
Principal Johnson here. First off, little piece of business. It's going to be a gathering in the auditorium. They're going to act out a play on the Holocaust, so you guys can find out about that. And Teresa Strasser, who everyone thinks is pregnant, turns out has a hymen. I checked myself. Thing was saddle leather thick, so no problemo there. Evidently, she just gives copious amounts of oral. So, fellas... Line on up and just poke it right through the mail slot. T's going to be manning that glory slot over there for, well, let's just call it through lunch and nutrition. Also, she has a black stepfather.
Oh, that really helped, too. Yeah. Let me tell you, that was also delightful.
Her and her biological kids, you can't see me hold my fingers up in quotations here because we're not sure who the father is. Probably a gang rape type situation. Looks like a mutt to me. Definitely a rescue situation. Yeah, hard to tell who didn't pull out a mama back in the mid-60s there, but late 70s, whatever, seems like she forged a few documents here. Dad, stepfather, Jewish, mom, hippie, and biological dad, Jew, but doesn't make a penny, so why bother? All right, everyone, fish sticks at the cafeteria. Have a good day. Please stand for Grand Old Flag. Thank you.
I was so innocent. I barely even kissed a boy, and I'd explain this to the principal.
I find that hard to swallow.
Like, really, I don't... And then, listen, I came back strong my junior year by having an inappropriately old boyfriend.
Yeah, showed the world. All right.
I think Amy's teaching her mom the same lesson.
We need to take ourselves a break.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
That may be one of the best stories you've ever told on this radio show, young lady.
Cathartic and cleansing.
It didn't even happen to me, and I'm thinking about taking rat poison.
We'll take a break. Home improvement questions. Home improvement questions.
Speaking of rat poison.
Back on base here. 866-901-ADAM. I will answer your home improvement questions next.
Right now on the Adam Carolla Show, Adam's taking your home improvement calls. If you got a question, he's got an answer. Call 866-901-ADAM. Now back to Adam, Danny, and Teresa on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, you ready for the intro, Bald Brian?
Let's do it.
From the pantheon of morning radio, a solitary gladiator steps into the ring.
Bad stucco. It's like a wall stud in your ceiling. Something called a tuck trowel. The bottom of a ceiling joist. You grind out the mortar. 2x6.
Adam Carolla answers your home improvement questions.
Here's what you need to do.
The quest begins now.
Boy, this is going to be fun.
Brian?
Hey.
Hey, what's going on, my brother?
Not much. How you doing?
Good. You have a question?
I do. I'm doing a kitchen remodel,
mm-hmm.
and I'm putting granite tile down on the countertops.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to finish or figure out how to finish that raw edge that's facing out.
All right. Well, let me say this, because I've done a little of this. Normally a specialty field. The guys who work with the tile and the guys who work with the slabs and the stone, always Middle Eastern dudes. You don't see any Middle Eastern dudes on construction sites. You only see the Middle Eastern dudes who do the countertops. They do the granite countertops, and they do the marble and all that. It's one of these age-old things. You can always tell who they are because they're wearing Italian loafers and black socks, the weird sheer black socks. There's something about Middle Eastern dudes where they don't have work boots and they don't have tennis shoes. They have dress loafers, they have work loafers. If Middle Eastern dudes played American football, they would do it in Italian loafers with sheer black socks. It's a creepy look.
The loafer cleats.
I don't know what the deal is, but somebody's got to get those folks some Red Wings. Maybe that's the problem with terrorism. Maybe these guys just need themselves a nice, comfortable boot with like a steel shank and oil-resistant sole. Maybe that's
right
it.
Right,
yeah. What's wrong with some boots for the Middle East? All right. Hey, where
My
was
whole
I?
My country is shaped like a boot.
That's right.
Yeah.
We know our boots in Italy. So, you are putting the granite on there. Now, here's the thing about granite. Granite, the reason they use granite for the countertop is it's much harder than the other stones, thus more durable. Something like marble is much softer, believe it or not, than granite. And by the way, anyone who has a countertop that's made of stone, you need to work it every once in a while. Every once a year, you need to put sealer, conditioner on it, clean it, and seal it because it will stain. And especially the things like marble and the softer stones. You drop citrus on there, like a lemon or something, it'll bleach it out. Vinegar, even a coffee mug or something like that, it will stain the bejesus out of it. Granite, the toughest. Now, because it's the most durable, it's the hardest edge to work. It is literally rock hard. If you want to work an edge, you can do it with a router. and you can do it with a carbide tipped router bit, and you spray water on it. When you cut stone or you work stone or you do anything with that, have somebody stand next to you with a squirt bottle and literally spray the blade. Me and my assistant Jay did a whole fireplace the other week, and he just sat there till his wrist fell off just while I had the diamond blade on the circular saw in a big cloud of dust. Yeah, keeping it real.
This is great.
Hey, Brian?
Yeah.
You have a router?
I do.
All right, get that. Get yourself a carbide. What kind of edge you want to put on there? Roman OG?
Yeah, just bullnose.
Just a roundover bullnose?
Yep.
Get a carbide bit. Get a good router. And have
this
your
nice.
Have your wife, or better yet, your life partner, squirt it with something while you're hitting it.
Inside the glory hole.
Yes, Brian?
And thank you.
On the other hand, you may just want to break down and get a slab of granite on there. I don't know about you guys, but when I see the tile, the 1 foot by 1 foot granite tiles on the countertop, I always think white trash. It's right. Cheap. Who the hell wants grout lines and stuff in the top? You know what I mean? You spill something, it gets stained. I mean, even if you butt them together.
See, I kind of think, and I hate to use any particular nationality, what the hell. I usually don't think white trash. I usually think Persian trash.
When you see lots of tile.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Wearing the Italian loafers. And by the way, the sheer black socks. Somebody, you know, when folks are coming to this country, we need to sit down, and this is a lot of foreigners. This is Danny, my people, too. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to explain, this is the land of the tube sock.
Yeah.
We invented the tube sock. And it took us a little while to get over those little shorty tennis socks. But we're now even into those shorty tennis socks now, just as long as they don't have that frilly ball on the back of them. But one thing we can't get over, sheer black socks. That's freaking the bejesus. Look, Danny's wearing a
knee
like
sock.
A woman's knee sock.
The white
it was,
kind of
it was
stocking.
Dark, and I was trying not to wake anybody up. I grabbed the wrong
sock. Well, consider us woken up. Point is even that is acceptable. Nothing creepier than when you see the hairs poking through and the little weird dark skin poking through that black sock, that sheer black sock. So when you come to this country, you should be given a Bible, a Constitution, and some tube socks.
So we've accomplished our mission.
Nice.
Be a better country if everyone wore tube socks. Ever been a terrorist and wore a tube sock?
No way.
No way.
No way.
No way. It's going to be the name of my next
Can I ask you a tiny home improvement question? Or just you could maybe just tell me why this is true. I have a table that is wrought iron, and it's about 6 feet by 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys carried it up a staircase to my rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
The table itself, the tabletop, is only about 2 inches thick, and all five of them couldn't carry it.
Mm.
It weighs 600 pounds.
Slab. Yeah, it's made of stone.
That much? It shouldn't weigh more than the wrought iron that is the same size, even bigger?
It is a nutty novelty. I mean, I'm an idiot. The way you normally do it is you buy a slab.
Right.
You go to the quarry place, and you got a guy going, this came from a volcano in Rio de Janeiro.
Terry was just visiting.
And you go, really? And it's all purple, and it's got crystals and veins in it and stuff, and you're like, how much is this one? They're like, $8 a square foot. And you're like, really? Eight people died pulling this from a volcano. Now it's $8. All right, it's great to be an American. So you buy it, and then you have a guy cut it out, deliver it, and put it in. But not me. I take the stupid thing back to the shop and decide that me and Jay are going to do it ourselves. There's nothing heavier. It's literally rock, and there's nothing more dense. It's like something from another planet. And, yes, that stuff is like 30 pounds a square foot. Yes,
don't
Bald
forget,
Brian.
Don't forget who hauled that 1,000-pound fireplace down to your house in Malibu, by the way.
Bald Brian pulled the Silverado up to the back of the warehouse, and when we were done cutting it, the three of us attempted to muscle this thing, and it was not very big. Yes.
I have a home improvement question for you now. How do you get that gunk, the liquefied, turned hardened stuff out of your pants after it's been sprayed all over you?
I forgot that I forced Bald Brian to come to the shop with us. And it makes marble dust or granite dust or whatever it is you're doing because it's liquefied. Right. You spray so much water on it, and then it just turns into this weird paste, and it's still in your shoes today. Good times. Well, the good news is later on, when you murder your girlfriend, the CSI team will track it back to my warehouse.
Which is funnier, him committing murder or having a girlfriend.
It's great hypothetical.
By the way, real quick, I'd like to apologize. Jack Silver told me if he ever hears my voice again during Home Improvement, he's going to fire me.
Oh, please.
He said, and I quote, "It's Home Improvement. You don't know anything about it. You add nothing to it. Back away."
Well, you can ask questions.
No, I can't.
All right.
He told me.
Nick,
Yeah, Adam.
What's your problem, my friend?
Well, the wife and I bought this house, about 4 months ago. And the guy who had owned it before us, the general contractor, knocked out some walls. Okay, well, here we are. A few months later, we're starting to notice these little things in the house. No grout underneath the fridge, on the tile, stuff like that. But here's the main issue. One of the beams going across the ceiling is cracked all the way through, and it's got like a 3-inch sag now. So I'm kind of wondering, is this thing going to come down or what?
You know, I'm sorry, I got lost in thought, because when you said general contractor, I just pictured an animated series where I played a retired colonel. General.
Right.
From the Marine Corps that had to start his own contracting business. And I just come walking in full garb, you know, every day and just yell at Mexican day laborers. Son, you make me want to puke. You call that cove molding?
Yeah.
You got to understand something, son. You skimp on those purlins or that cripple wall, this house going to come down and we're all going to be in for a world of hurt. Your last easy day was yesterday. I yell that at the Persian tile contractor in the weird black socks with the loafers on. Walk around the house, see guys eating lunch. They snap to attention and they salute, except for one guy's carrying a drywall knife and he stabs himself in the forehead.
Now, is general contractor wearing fatigues with a tool belt?
Yeah, I think that's what it would be. That's right. Lance McManus, general contractor. Huh? With the writers on strike, I might find an opening now. Drummed out of the service for punching out a commanding officer, now turned to doing home improvement, but he hasn't lost his touch with the grunts. Good stuff. All right. Where the hell were we?
I don't know. I'm not speaking.
Oh, yeah. Where are you? Darren.
We'll be back.
Hey, Darren. I mean, Nick.
Yeah.
Nick, what's your problem?
Well, the beams. He knocked out these walls. Right, coming off the kitchen and going
into
the dining room.
Nice to talk to you.
Not that nice.
Things are sagging.
That's right. The beams are cracked all the way through as well.
So the guy took out bearing walls, meaning walls that were holding things up versus partition walls. Yes? Yes. You're going to have to pick up the load, as they say, and that means you're going to have to pass a header in. Boy, it gets very sexual, doesn't it?
Inside the glory hole.
Yeah.
Got a header. And...
Hey, buddy?
Yeah.
This is more than you can handle.
So headers, what are they, like 12 feet long, 12 inches by 4?
I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally. You need someone with real know-how.
Well, the general contractor's supposed to have know-how too, right? But
yeah.
He took out, what did you say, bearing walls?
Yeah. You, ironically, have the how part down of know-how. And you also have the no part, as in, I cannot do this. But when you combine the two, you don't have those. It's ironic, you know what I mean?
It's a different kind of know-how. It's the no-way know-how.
No way know-how as opposed to the know-how know-how.
You all have earned your pay right now.
All right. Hire a professional, because this is more than you've bitten off way too much. All right, one more. T, do you see anyone you like on there? Just point to one.
Cindy on line one.
Cindy on line one. Let's talk to Frank on line two.
Never fails.
All right. No. Okay. I'll talk to Cindy. Cindy, what's going on, girly?
Hi. I had a nephew come in and tear out our old bathtub. House was built in 1960. Redid all the tile. He didn't actually move any plumbing, but he put a new tile, and he didn't feel it.
Is it one of those iron bathtubs?
It was.
There is nothing heavier on the planet than one of those old iron bathtubs.
Oh, it sat out in my front yard for about 2 weeks before I got somebody to take it out.
I know. So you can only move it like 20 feet a year.
That's it.
You have to just make a planter out of it. It's the heaviest thing you can move out of a house. You know what a lot of guys do? They take a sledgehammer to them and they bust them up. They're so heavy.
For real?
Yeah, you can hit them and they just bust up. All right, so your nephew...
Yes.
Your loser stoner nephew.
Exactly.
You threw that Hesher a bone, and he came over and effed up your bathroom, right?
Right. So now the wall in my son's room, which is next to the bathroom,
loser
the
Hesher
paint,
number two.
The paint is peeling, the carpet's wet. So I don't, because he didn't seal the tile.
Yeah, that's called puberty, Missy. That's not coming from the bathroom. That's coming from your son. Your son's got a leak, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my gosh. It's a huge leak then. I don't know.
Yeah, to the tune of three times a day.
Would that leak enough?
Yeah, you didn't seal the tile.
Right.
Yeah, the grout is porous, and you need to seal that grout. Although somebody's taken some pretty sloppy baths in there. I mean, how much mess you making?
Well, it's quite a bit of water. You know, the sun does stay in there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what he's doing. How old is he?
He's 16.
Yeah. Explain to him. Look, do me a favor. And look, we should all do this. We're living in Southern California. It is 90 degrees. I got in my car at 5:20 this morning. The thermometer on the car said 70 effing degrees. It's Santa Ana. It's hot. It's a dust bowl. We're in the middle of one of the biggest droughts I can remember. And they keep telling you, oh, turn your sprinklers on at night or don't run the water when you're brushing your teeth. The real PSA should not be Edward James Olmos telling you to shut the water when you're brushing your teeth. Should be Ace Man going, hey, Spanky McSpankstrom, those 20-minute showers where you're actually in the shower for 2.5 of those 20 minutes. How about you hit the hamper with the rest of the men and let's see if we can keep Southern California flush. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's the real PSA. How much water is wasted by teenage boys running the shower and just having at themselves?
I say not nearly as much as the vibrating shower head on teenage girls that have just come of age.
Okay. Then I'll revise it and say, ladies, gentlemen, I'm talking to everyone between the age. Check down. Do you have a pube? Uh-huh. Is it a relatively new one? Because there's a patch of gray down there. You can turn the TV off right now. But if you're somewhere between the age of 13 and 25, whether you have a roommate or just a prying stepmom, who are you kidding in that shower? Now, stepmom, I need to talk to you, too, which is you need to make an area that's conducive to your stepson's problem. You can't have him hide in the bathroom and waste millions of gallons of water each year. How about you create a room, maybe off the entry hall, call it the Spankatorium, where a man can go in a judgment-free zone.
And stay as long as he likes.
That's right. Just ten square yards.
As long as you like. What do you want, a date with yourself? You're in and out in 30 seconds. I don't bring myself flowers.
Ten square yards of 3 mil visqueen plastic.
Yeah.
On a penthouse from 1989.
And a
beanbag
machine.
Chair. And a lava lamp. And one scented candle. And we are going to, and you'll know he's done
notes?
when the candle goes out. That means he's done. We will save millions of gallons collectively. Huh? Come on, parents, it's up to you.
I think Adam writes himself crank notes. Dear Adam, I love you so much. I can't live without you. Love, well, me, really.
We will take ourselves a break. How about you shoot us an outro there, Bald Brian, or do we even have one?
I like it.
Sound like I had much production value. We'll take a quick break. T.
Yep.
It's coming up in the news, girl.
We'll be back.
People magazine has determined the sexiest man alive.
No, good times. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Quick break. Back with that next.
Hey, Adam. This is Brandon up in Washington. I'm afraid I shouldn't even leave it because somebody's going to steal the idea. But instead of having a little tab on the side to lift the toes and feet up, there should be a spring in the back so that when nobody is sitting on the toilet, it springs up. Got to save in toilet paper costs, and they'd be a lot more hygienically pleasing or cleansing or something like that.
Huh.
Anyway, that's a rough idea. Don't pay for it!
Call 866-901-ADAM. Now back to Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaduce, and Teresa Strasser on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, that's a little something known as serencrapity or kismet, although you put a S in there somewhere, because, and I'll tell you why.
Please.
I left the public restroom here at the mother station, KLSX, only moments ago in the hallway, and I walked in right as Dawson walked in, and Dawson walked in front of me, and he walked right into a bathroom stall.
Dude.
And I pulled up at the urinal, and I was doing my tinkle, and I said, Dawson, I hope you're not going number two in there. We have talked about this many times. And he said, nope, boss, doing a number one. And I said, all right, I hope the seat's up, Dawson. There was a nice 5 Mississippi of silence, and then I heard the clank of the seat going up. And I said, Dawson, tell me you didn't just walk into the toilet and take a whiz when there's an open urinal right here. And by the way, he walked in front of me. He walked past two open urinals to make a number one in the stall with the toilet and didn't think it was necessary to lift the seat.
I waited for you, man.
Now, if there was ever a better argument for putting the little handle or doing the little spring load on it, it is that. Dawson walked past two open urinals in an empty bathroom. There was not a soul in the bathroom. There were two open urinals. He walked past both of them so he could whiz on the toilet seat.
Okay, I'm coming to Dawson's defense. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
What happens is he walks in and Corolla's right behind him. So his choices are, because we all know Adam does not, a deuce is how you call it, do deuces at work. So what you are going to be is shoulder to shoulder with the boss, with
now,
the ace man.
I did that
You're
math.
You're going to whip out your
did
who's
not
it.
Know that.
What if it's bigger than the boss's? You're never going to get anywhere in this company.
if he pulls it out
this big, you know that Adam's never going to give him a raise.
If he just whips it out, it's bigger.
If the word whip is involved?
Yes.
What I don't understand is the lifting of the seat. I just said, of course it's that boss, and then just aimed really
Dawson
well.
Dawson is here to defend himself.
Dawson, what happened?
I just like peeing in stalls.
All right, but what about the toilet seat?
Well, it's got that little empty hole.
You love,
first
off,
drips just go right through there, so you're all right.
First off,
I have incredible aim, Ace.
Okay, couple things.
Are you willing to prove that?
First off, your urethra.
Because I got a cup and 5 feet says you can't do it.
Your urethra could be scraped with resins like I did in high school in the coat hangers. Got so much bong juice in there. Number one, it comes out of you like wiper spray. I could feel it on me, and I was 12 feet away. So please, there's a 3.5-inch crack in the front of the toilet, and he thinks he's going to part that Red Sea. How dare you?
You're right, Ace.
How dare you take a whiz with the toilet? Do you see what animals men are, Teresa? Do you see how filthy animals we are?
I'm curious, though. Why is it better to pee in the stall?
I just enjoy it more.
I know guys like that.
It's just
more
pleasurable.
Private.
Yeah, more territory to mark. And by the way, you don't pee in the stall. You pee on the stall, you animal.
Exactly.
You didn't raise the toilet seat.
I did when you told me to.
But you couldn't have taken one of your filthy slip-on Vans and just kicked the thing up to the 90-degree position. You had to whiz on the toilet seat.
I thought you didn't like people who used their feet to mess around with toilets.
I don't like when people use their feet to open the bathroom door because then I get whiz foot on the handle. It's like you were worried about germs on the handle. Oh, you got germs on the handle. You just took the baton death mark through Dawson's whiz trail of tears, and now you're using your foot to open the goddamn door. Dawson, you make me sick. Get out of here.
This week in rage.
I hope you drown in your bong. I hope you fall in your bong and drown, and your parents find you.
I love you, but I don't like a guy who doesn't immediately think to lie. First thing should have been, I hope that toilet seat's up. Of course it is. Finish whizzing. They very quietly put it up or wait for the ace man to leave.
I like the fact that he told the truth and faced the very unfortunate consequences of his actions.
I just do when I see this accuracy I've been hearing so much.
The show has reached a new low.
Well, here's the thing about lying. You have to do it immediately because once that 5 Mississippi was up, I knew whatever came out of his lips wasn't going to be good. It was literally like this. Dawson, I hope that seat's up.
Dude.
Five dudes later.
You gotta go like this. You gotta go, boss, why are you lifting the seat up as quietly as possible? You gotta go, boss, how dare you? I've heard you tell this story a million times. Of course I would put the seat up, and by that time it's up.
Listen.
You gotta learn to lie to the ace man. That's how I learned my living.
When I'm in charge, he will have to wear the scarlet seat. And that will be a toilet seat with just a piece of chain around it, like you're at the gas station. It's got the keys to the men's room on it, and you would have to wear it for one full work week around your neck, so everyone knows the shame that you brought on the company. Wow. I really believe there could be a class action lawsuit. This is closer
Dawson
to animal than his man. Walks by two open urinals into the stall and doesn't lift the seat to do a number one.
I'm intimidated peeing next to you. I don't want to pee next to you.
He didn't know it at the time. He was in front of me, and I was behind him, and he didn't know me.
I'd pee next to Brian anytime, anywhere.
Come on.
I'm just saying, if you can get fired for stealing copier toner.
Right.
Come on now.
If you're spraying your own toner, you should be dismissed.
All right, T.
Yep.
Let's hear the news, baby girl.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
Wonder what he was peeing on when he did that VO.
Dude.
Hey, Dawson, my car's out in the parking lot.
Dawson spelled his name on the car? No, spelled it wrong.
Boy, is Dawson excited about me launching into the news and thus getting off this topic.
Gee, where's your purse? Keep an eye on that.
Damn.
Dawson will go number two into anything that's open. It was on any open object.
Dude.
All right.
Phil Jackson, coach of the Lakers.
How about
Dawson Wisdom?
How about Phil Toilet, the guy we work with over here?
You know that expression, swish? It didn't really come from no rim. It came from Dawson.
Dawson banked it.
Yep.
Yeah, watch out. He's going to be PO'd. We keep talking about him.
Phil Jackson.
Yeah. That was his nickname in high school. Phil Jackson. He'd fill anything. Potted plant, purse. Didn't matter. Guy in a wheelchair. He didn't care. Phil Jackson, if they called him. Anything that moved took a whiz on. He's the only guy I knew who would whiz on a dog.
Dude.
Coach Jackson thought he would joke around with the press after the Lakers lost in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. The Spurs made 13 three-pointers.
Wow.
In the game. 13. And he was kind of trying to make the point about...
you know what Dawson needs, speaking of basketball? you know that guy, that kid that runs out on the court wearing the Lakers sweatpants and mops up the sweat?
Right.
Does a quick move?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they do a thing where the guy's going to the foul line, there's a quick break in the action, the kid comes running out with the mop, does the serpentine pattern, then runs back. Dawson needs that. Dawson, every time he felt like doing a number one, little guy in a Lakers uniform, run out, hit the seat, wipe it down, the surrounding area, the tile and the partition, just wipe the whole area down.
I think I might have an idea, but with my sports references being what they are, I could be wrong. I bought a speed bag for the first time, and it needs a needle to blow it up, and I'd never seen one before.
Dawson said it's on his...
right into your urethra?
Yeah.
You couldn't miss!
Dawson, by the way, told me during the break, your speed bag's on his to-do list. Dawson told me once during the break. He told me, he said, there are two things in this world. There's things I peed on and things I'm going to pee on. That's what he said.
The world is divided.
That's into two things. And I said, well, wait, now hold on. I said, how about the space shuttle? He said, done. I said, really? I said, what about my microphone? I said, grandmother nodded his head. I said, how about the eternal flame? How about the monument to JFK? Said, yes. Oh, yes.
Freaking thing's eternal.
That's right.
I drive.
Not anymore.
Here's a joke that got Phil Jackson in trouble.
Oh, Phil Jackson got into trouble. Yeah.
We call this a Brokeback Mountain game because there's so much penetration and kick out. So, you know, it's one of those games.
The NBA got mad, and now he's sorry.
Very timely Brokeback Mountain joke, but...
Right,
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That was funny, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think it was offensive, but he's apologized for making a sexual reference.
But who's he apologizing? It's that he's offended the gays in that one? Who's he apologizing to?
Well, in his apology, he was sorry to everyone. Texans, gays,
right,
all manner of people.
All right.
You can't just say, like, I'd like to boof Shaq. And not have to apologize to anybody?
I don't know.
Why did he have to apologize for that?
It's one of those things, a sexual reference?
Somebody, is it penetration?
Somebody told him he had to apologize. Just wanted to get it over with.
Yeah, the NBA reprimanded him. Now, on to People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive. Tomorrow, that issue is dropping. And this year, the honor goes to...
I'm waiting.
Matt Damon.
Dawson Peon.
Matt Damon.
Dawson said he's going to cover the top 10 this year to play it safe.
Matt Damon. And Matt Damon, in a letter to People, said...
Dawson's peeing on me. Please make him stop.
At the risk of being forward, if you asked me, which you didn't, I would suggest...
Dear People, right now, my heart is warm and so is my right leg. There's a stoner peeing on me.
I would suggest, if you ask me, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady for this award. He's like a taller, better-looking version of me anyway.
Oh, Bill Simmons, the sports guy from ESPN, would love that.
Dear Online Diary, sexiest
Man of the Year, Tom Brady. Hey, what are you doing, dude? My eyes! My eyes, they're burning! They're burning!
Dawson Flad. All right, question for you. Matt Damon.
Hold on.
Blowhard.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Go Pats.
Sorry. Matt Damon, blowhard or extraordinarily cool to have written that letter?
Dawson. Damon.
You're still drinking that coffee, boss? Yeah. Brass ones.
Matt Damon always seems so magnanimous and so friendly and so shucks, but not in a obnoxious aw shucks kind of way.
You believe him?
Seems like a cool guy.
He does.
Yeah, he does.
I would say, though, hold your ears, Danny, but sexiest man alive at 5'9", I don't know. I'm just saying.
If I were to hold my ears at 5'9", I'd be holding the top of my head.
What I mean is, I can't have sexiest woman alive A cup. You know what I mean? There are just certain things that make the sexiest man alive. It's called tall, dark, and handsome. Right. Strapping. He mentioned Tom Brady. Yes, right. Tom Brady's 6'4 and really good looking and has a cleft in his chin. That is. Matt Damon's the sexiest sort of teen alive.
I call him cute. More cute than he's sexy. Cute.
It wasn't long ago he was voted one of those magazines' ugliest leading man.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Also on the list of sexy men, Ryan Reynolds, Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp, Will Smith, Javier Bardem, Adrian Grenier. I don't know how to say his name, but he's...
He said Dawson had no problem peeing on Adrian Grenier, but Will Smith was a battle.
Has he ever peed?
He's a big guy.
Has he ever peed on Justin Timberlake?
Mm-hmm.
Also on the list.
And everyone in his band, and that includes backup singers, engineers, and he said roadies and tech guys still.
Whoa, dude, everybody. What do you think slowed down Britney Spears that night? Jason Swallow.
He got the guy who drives a semi-truck with the equipment, and he got everyone in the band. He's working on a urine grenade.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Dawson said, he told me this during the break. He said...
Long talk, you guys.
Yeah. He said, you know what, Ace Man? I can't count on urinating on every single creature on God's green earth, and I could cover a lot more ground with a little something called a whiz grenade. That's where he just rolls it into the room, and it just blows it up and get the whole... You know, get everyone on the floor with just a couple of grenades.
Now, knowing Dawson could never build such a thing, was he coming here for help? Was he coming to the MacGyver of urine and asking you to help him devise such a device?
He's trying to get in touch with Kaczynski. He said he whizzed on him once in high school, so they had a certain bond, but he's riding him into prison. He's trying to get a hold of the Unabomber.
Open your envelope.
That's right. Trying to send urine in the mail and blow it
up. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm Teresa Strasser. That was the news.
No tea.
Teresa Strasser. You, CNN.
Tea, I feel like Danny talks so much about whiz that you're never ever able to get to it.
We got
to
save time for our new game. Will Dawson pee on it?
And then we're going to eat it.
Easy money to be made there. All right. Mark Maron, comedian Mark Maron's coming in next. He's going to be this Saturday. Wow. As we talked about yesterday, he's going to be at Caesar's Palace. Every comedian on the planet is going to be at Caesars, or at least in Vegas, performing.
Not me. I'll be with Screech in Chicago. Killing myself.
Take that, Seinfeld.
God.
We'll take a quick break. We'll talk to funny man Mark Maron next.
It's the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser.
I think drug testing is bad. I think I feel bad for people who get tested for drugs when they work. In the military, even I think not only is drug testing unconstitutional, I think it's cheating. You know, the way I figured, if you can't tell I'm high by looking at me, I win. I'm not going to pee anywhere except on your desk, Captain. I'll come into work early because that's a real morale builder for me, sir.
I set you up pretty easily here, Ace. Go for it. Mark Maron on the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah. Been there, done that. what he has to say to that urine-soaked bladder.
I just, I can't believe I get here and some guy named Dawson pissed on me. I can't believe it. Dude.
He got you, too.
I waited for you, man.
How did that happen? I'm like, I'm here 5 minutes. I'm like, hi, how are you? What are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah. Hey, you know the rules.
Is this how they say hi at the Adam Carolla show?
Clearly posted at the top of the door. Read the bylaws.
I wouldn't have worn my new kicks here.
Mark Maron, yes. Comedian in studio. Yes, Dawson is mad.
He's officially mad.
He looked at me and I said, Dawson, all you had to say when I asked you if the seat was down or up is that it was up. And he looked at me with righteous indignation and he said, I'm not a liar. And I said, yes, you're just a guy who whizzes on toilet seats. You're humble, non-lying toilet seat whizzer.
We all make mistakes.
I've been here. It took me an hour. I left last night from Highland Park. Last night,
really?
Yeah.
I'm really starting to think. Honestly, I mean, because if you live here, you have to accept it. You have to accept that there's traffic.
Yes.
But there are some days where I just realize it kills empathy. It really kills every part of my heart. Like if I'm stuck in traffic, you have that moment where you're stuck in traffic for 25 minutes and it just dissipates for no reason at all, and you have that moment. It's like that was about nothing. How is that even possible? And
right.
Here's how it kills empathy, though. If you're stuck in the same traffic for 25 minutes, which happened this morning, and you see the worst accident you've ever seen in your life causing the traffic, all you can say is, oh, okay, good.
Oh, yeah, good.
Good, good.
Fantastic.
Good. That's why. Good.
Yeah.
There's an explanation.
I thought it was a couple of soccer moms and SUVs that traded a little paint, but the guy at the moped that got hit with the nuclear armament truck, that's satisfying.
Well, now
okay.
There's a reason.
All right. This could have taken another 10 minutes. I would have been cool
sometimes
with it.
Sometimes the roads get slick from Dawson's pee.
The thing that is funny about traffic, it's the same relationship I have with my alarm clock. Every morning it goes off and I think, what is this? What's going on?
Again?
And then I get in my car and I hit traffic and I'm incredulous. What? What's... there's traffic every single day, every direction, everywhere, every way, but yet it's all, I'm a newborn baby. Yeah. I get behind the wheel, I'm like, now what's this? What's this? It's the same thing that you encountered on the way in, on the way out, and everywhere you go, but yet I can treat it like the eyes of a newborn.
Exactly, because you want to fight it. You want to try to accept it, but there are times where I have to fight the urge to plow my car into the car in front of me, because I feel like it's the only way I'm going to get relief. Literally, I feel like I'm going to do it, and I know it's going to happen. I'm just going to, boom, just to see that guy get out in front of me and go, what the hell's the matter with you? I feel better. Thank you. You helped me out.
The guy already did it at the farmer's market.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I just want to plow it into the car right in front of me.
That story was so amazing. It was like, how many folks did you hit? 68. Like, really? Because usually at mid-30s, I start to apply the brake. Yeah. That's how I work with pedestrians.
Well, he's an old guy, right? He said it was some sort of brain skid. He just said, like, I don't know. I was
hit the gas when he was trying to brake, I think.
Right. That happens to people. And then, again, after you start to get into the mid-30s or the low 40s, when the bodies start to pile up so much so that you have to hang your head out the window so you can run over more people,
some sort of
that's
DJ.
When I like to apply the brake. That's me.
When the bodies have completely covered your windshield like the flowers at Princess Di's.
Right.
Why aren't the wipers working?
Because that guy weighs over 130.
I can't get it off my windshield.
I feel your pain. I feel your lost productivity.
All right. I can breathe, though. I'm all right.
You
it
do?
Took me a while. It
you
took
can?
Me, yeah, I'm going
to
be okay.
Mark, what do you do to deal with stress in your life?
What do I do to deal with it?
Do you have calming?
Well, usually I spend most days, almost going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
it's a very active, engaged almost. I get up and I'll be like, all right, I'm going. This is it. Today's the day I turn it all around.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'll actually, and then you get into that weird time frame where you're saying things like, well, I've only got 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take me 10 minutes to get there. I'm going to be on the thing for 20. I don't think I'm going to make it today. I don't think there's anyone. You ever suit up to go? It'll give you some momentum? Here's what usually happens. Here's how I deal with stress. It's like I'll put my gym clothes on. I'll actually get to the door and just crumple into a ball of apathy and say, why can't I leave my house? And then I'll go back into my house, masturbate, and rationalize that as exercise.
Mm.
I can see that.
Well, I'm sitting there, I'm figuring like, look, I got my heart rate up. You know, I still got my sneakers on.
Right.
So I think it counts. I think it counts.
I'd be Mr. Universe.
He's thinking. No, you're totally thinking. Here's what I do, because I smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day. Now,
that's bad?
I've heard that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be healthy.
Dawson,
I just
put him out
look
last
healthy.
Night. Yeah.
So what I figured is, I start to burn fat at 112 beats per minute.
Yeah.
And then I start to burn muscle at 180 beats per minute.
Mm-hmm.
I figure if I smoke enough, that laying still makes my heart beat at 140 beats per minute.
You need
I'm exercising constantly.
You need a workout tape, Danny.
I just need to smoke more.
And you're pretty pissed off, too, so that kind of tenses you up.
Yeah.
And you get, you get the tone from
the
being just anger and cigarettes. I was at the Y yesterday. I actually went yesterday. And I can't stand what I'm sitting there, and some guy's sitting on the bench. He's actually, I'm just here, I'm going to try and blast out this flu. So this guy comes. Don't you hear the, he comes to the Y sick. You're going to blast it all over us, you ass. I mean, that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
I don't like the
impunity of the dudes at the Y because there are no chicks around. And I went to the Burbank Y once and saw guys shooting pool naked.
Oh, yeah. There's
literally, there's a pool table in the locker area. And there's like a little, you know, I don't know, joined game area.
Is it Glendale?
Glendale.
Yeah.
Old dude nude shooting pool. You know what that looks like from behind when the guy has to get the bridge out?
But
you know what that looks like?
Yeah.
You have to keep both feet on the floor, Pops.
Right.
It's a good thing. The Y is, I'd rather belong to the Y than like a high fashion gym because I think there's a lesson to be learned. There's a lesson in humility at the Y. You go to a fancy gym where it's nothing but, you know, kind of creepy old gay guys that have that weird skin tone and they're preening and desperate.
Right.
I don't need that pressure. But if you go to the Y, it's like a community center. In the locker room at the Y, like you're saying, you see the full arc of decay.
Yeah. You see what you were and what you'll become.
If you're lucky. You know, you see the 18-year-old kid naked, and then you see
Dawson peeing on 92-year-old guy
trying to wrestle his testicles into a jock strap.
I know.
And you have to have that moment where you're like, if I'm lucky. That's what I get.
And it's like, and anyone see Rocky II where he's trying to catch the chicken in the alley?
Yeah.
That's what it's like with the old guys in the testicles. They get loose. Guy chases it with a butterfly net.
And that's the best that can happen.
That's right.
When I walked into the green room, one of the first things he said to me was, "You sober?"
Yeah.
And when I first got sober, I quit all my gyms because I thought, there's more to what I'm doing than just drinking and taking drugs. I'm living this whole lifestyle of picking up chicks in spandex rather than really working out at the gym. I got rid of all my cars. I joined the Y, and I saw my minister naked the first day
there.
You
go.
Wow.
I went right back to the hot chicks in spandex.
Bless me, Father.
Yeah. He'd seen Danny naked many times as a youth, but this is the first time they turned the tables. Yeah, it's weird because on one hand you want to go hang out with the beautiful people, on the other hand you feel like a poser. Let me ask you guys this: when it comes to the gyms, now most gay guys have 10 gym memberships, and we all think it's because they work out really hard. But you can work out really hard at one gym. This is a variety of nude dude you get to look at, and I don't blame them. I just wish they would admit it. Whenever you talk to gay guys, my first question is always, God damn, the world is your oyster. Well, not really your oyster, more your hot dog. But the point is you get to go to a gym. You get to walk right into the steam room and see what you think of as physically attractive or sexual, all nude, all the time. And they go, please don't flatter yourself. I don't care about that. And it's like, you don't care about it? Because when I went over to your apartment, I was swallowed by an avalanche of gay porn, which is nothing but nude dudes who work out all the time being nude. So don't tell me. And I'm heterosexual. I'd cop to it. If they let me walk right into the woman's dressing room and just go take a sauna with some 19-year-old secretaries that were working out on their lunch break, I would never leave the gym.
Yeah, even if they were 40-year-old secretaries.
I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
I'd take them all on.
Naked's naked.
See, I can see you're my kind of guy. I don't care if the 40-year-old secretary is missing a limb.
Cool. You don't mind, though. Here's the deal. I will not be uptight.
Mm.
And gays, you admit you like looking at nude dudes at the gym. I don't care if you're looking at me.
I don't feel that's weird.
Danny insists upon
it. My neighbor, and I don't know, I mean, I know he's out, but I don't know if he wants me to talk about him on the radio. But my next door neighbor at my new condo is gay. And we didn't know at first, although he screams it. And I said, well, we're going to put a jacuzzi up here, so we're going to put a wall for some privacy. And he started to say he didn't want a wall up there. And Amy said, well, what if I want to jacuzzi naked? And he looked at her, and then all of a sudden he went into Super Queen. He all of a sudden just said, honey, you can be up here naked all day. I just won't care.
Right.
So I looked at him, showed him my butt, and said, hey, I work out all the time. You like this? And he goes, oh, that's fine. And I went, oh, okay.
And then Dawson
I don't care what gender likes it as long as they like it.
Mark Maron
gets to touch it.
Mark Maron, would you mind being ogled by a gay man at the gym?
Well, no, because I'm getting to that point in my life where I really don't know how much I'm putting out there. You know what I mean? In terms of, do I still look good? And if they're looking at you, you must look okay.
Yeah, attractive is attractive.
That's exactly right. But if a gay man thinks you look good, you look good.
Yeah, you got something going on. But, yeah, a lot of them, I think, look at me, it's like as the straight guy that could use it. You know, maybe, you know, like that guy looks like he could use this. You know, he looks uptight. I think that's his problem. You know what I mean?
You're not reading into it? You really think that's what they're saying?
Of course I'm reading into it. I can't. I just know that there are some dudes you see at the gym where, you know, they are so ripped and so, you know, whether they're gay or not. And I don't understand what you're saying to the world. With a body like that, basically what you're saying is, like, I'm unemployed. I'm here all day long. I got nothing going on.
Oh, you couldn't be more wrong.
Do you mean women?
Roids cost a fortune.
That's true. I know there are women at the Hollywood YMCA.
Yeah.
Do you meet women at the gym when you go?
Well, you know, look, I should give you a little background on that because, my wife recently brought it to my attention that I have an anger problem, right? Huh. But she didn't say it like that. She said, I'm leaving.
Did you kill that bitch?
Sorry.
I only asked you that because I noticed you're not wearing a ring.
She left, you know, about 6 months ago.
Sorry.
And, you too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How can they just leave? You know what I mean? Don't you have that moment, you must have, it was on television, where you realize, like, oh, my God, I don't have complete control over other people.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, it's an awkward moment.
It took her all day to pack up that money.
Here's how it works. Yeah. They don't just leave. They give you the signs they're leaving for a full year. You don't pick up on it, and then you're blindsided when they're gone. But they've been telling you for a full 12 months, you got to start listening to me. I don't like being ignored.
Stop
we never do things together. Yeah, and what guys do
stop
is
breaking chairs.
We tune. Here, yes. We work from threats. That's what motivates us.
Would that have helped if she said, listen, you take care of this anger or I'm out?
No, it did help, and I was doing it. But, you know, that once the case is closed in their mind, it's closed. And I think that maybe you're right about a year, but at about 9 months, she had put the dossier together,
right.
And that was it. The case was closed. In the 3 months that I tried to change things,
right.
It was too late. It was too little,
right.
Too late.
You're acting like they came up with the decision that afternoon when they came up with it a year ago, and you can't reopen that file.
Look, all I know is that we were in couples counseling, and I find that, you know, if you're a guy and you're in couples counseling, that's basically an ambush that you pay for.
Right. I've said it many times.
Yeah. At the point you're there, you know what I mean? You're just there to, you know, pay $100 to a person who's going to watch your wife call you an ass over and over again for you to agree, and then it's a racket.
I know. You pay to get your ass kicked by an angry lesbian.
But that's how they get you, Adam.
Therapist. No. Angry lesbian and your wife, they gang up on you.
Right, and you get out into the car with her, and you're like, what the hell was that about? So you start yelling again. She's like, why don't you save this for next week? That's how there's
it's an intervention that you pay for.
It's a racket.
Yes, I completely agree. And here's the problem. There are only two sets and two types of people that get into couples counseling or to being a couples counselor, sort of angry lesbians that hate men, and then wussified guys that just take the side of all women. You don't have a guy. It'd be great to have a guy like Jesse Ventura or something, and there's big 6 foot bald guy, big clef in his chin going, would you shut up, bitch? Mark, hand me a beer. Now, what were you saying?
I would, you know, the thing was, is like, I would do it. I was willing to work on it. You know, like, you must have felt too. You're like, I'll do anything. Let's do this.
That's exactly what I said.
Right. But by the time they leave, then you're out. It's
they've
over.
They've already made a decision.
Yeah, they've had a dialogue with the you they invented in your head. They have an effigy of you in your head,
right.
In their head that they hit.
Hold on. Dawson wants to pee on it. I had to explain to him it doesn't really exist.
Well,
he said, I'm not taking any chances.
I wrote my wife's character completely. So she doesn't really exist. But when she said, I'm going, and really meant it. I mean, she said in one breath, I don't love you anymore. I haven't loved you in years. I've been trying to put this together and forgive you for the thing you've done, but I really can't. It's been years, so if you'll have to excuse me if I don't shed a tear, but it's time for you to go. In one breath, and I knew she meant that was it. And I went, I said, well, I can blow my brains out, or I can go to Starbucks. And I chose poorly and went to Starbucks. And I sat down there, and I'm crying, and I hear this voice go, I really like your show. I turned around, this kind of hot chick named Amy, and I went home with her and have never been home since.
Wow.
I haven't been single a day.
She said she didn't love you, though. That didn't happen with my wife. My wife was very upset when she left, and she wanted a certain amount of time. And that time came to pass, and she was still undecided. So I said, well, look, what am I going to live my life in relation to your indecision? So I filed for divorce, and that was it. Exactly. And now I'm a guy living alone in a house in Highland Park with four cats. How is that even allowed?
Wow, hey, dude.
Mark,
you crossed the line there. I was digging you.
Mark, you know how hard it is to masturbate in front of four cats?
Mark's
I do.
Crying eyes to steal your breath and your semen. The Comedy Festival is where Mark's going to be this Saturday, November 17th. He'll be the end. angry one. Caesar's Palace. Great to see you, Mark Maron.
See you,
as per usual.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to wrap it up after this.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. And now the man who once took a leak in Jimmy Kimmel's children's sandbox, Adam Carolla.
All right. Touche.
Do you remember when Dawson worked here?
I was only beginning to take a leak in his kid's sandbox when Jimmy stopped me and wanted to know what I was doing. And I said, I was taking a leak. And he said, where? And I said, in your yard. And he said, that's my kid's sandbox. And I said, look, if you don't want people to urinate in your plot of sand, you should put it inside. He used to get mad at me for that and parking on his lawn, too. I just want to see if I can make this card out. The ink's running. I guess Dawson must have gotten to it. I want to thank Debbie Mazar.
Good thing she wasn't in the studio.
Yeah, the joy of giving, MasterCard promotion. Go to priceless.com. Mark Maron, bitter Mark Maron, but funny. Comedy Festival Saturday at Caesar's Palace. And, of course, tonight, Drawn Together, 10:30, hey. Comedy Central, my show. Watch Spanky Ham go to town. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
Natural butt plug.